All right, 3, 2, 1. What are we, some kind of Birdman or the unexpected virtue of ignorance? Hello, I'm Adam from Your Movie Sucks. That was a quote from The Flash. The Flash, a good movie. This is Sardonicast.
Hi. Hi, I'm Ralph Seppi, and I have a channel, Ralph the Movie Maker.
What?
Really?
Ralph the Movie Maker.
I'm Alex from IHE, and I've just come out of the Speed Force, guys, and I'm hyped.
Oh, shit.
I'm antsy over here.
You're part of the Speed Force? I'm so jealous.
Yeah, remember that Oscar-winning moment?
Oh, yeah.
That was epic. Epic.
I love that we got like that Oscar moment for two Zack Snyder films that were, I guess, decided the same way a 420 award would be decided. Just a Twitter
yeah,
poll.
Yeah.
And yeah. Really just shows the legitimacy of social media and Twitter and fan culture.
Fan boats.
I forgot that existed until you just mentioned it.
Yeah,
yeah, that'll probably be the cheer moment this year.
How did you forget the Flash entering Speed Force moment?
That was like 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Just
abandoned
that. Was there even one last year?
Because we didn't get one last year. We didn't get a Twitter award.
Oh, yeah, we didn't.
Like a fan award, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was their compromise after removing the Black Panther award. Remember they were going to do like most popular film
like
or something?
But that was like a fake win. Like it was just a bunch of bots, I think.
I know.
It was a bunch of Zack Snyder bots. So it wasn't even like a valid Oscar win.
No.
So
unlike the 420 awards where it's purely just real
that's valid.
Passionate, valid film going cool
valid
cat
is
fans.
The word, yeah.
I like that Daddy Derek got to give himself his own award though. That's pretty cool. That was like a Nathan For You moment. There was something I wanted to mention before we get into The Flash. I think I mentioned this to you like a couple years ago or something, Alex. There's a mod for the original Halo on PC called Cursed Halo.
Oh, Cursed Halo. Yeah, I've seen some videos on it.
You've seen some videos. The newest update is like the easiest thing to install now. It's literally just, you have the Master Chief Collection on Steam, and then you just like click the link in the guy's video, Inferno Plus, who made the mod. You know, subscribe to the mod, and it's just, oh, the game's modded, and it's fucking, I need you to play it. I just started playing the newest update for it, like, yesterday. I'm going to finish it next week. It's so funny. You would love it.
Is it this one, Cursed Halo Again?
Yes.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm just pimping that out, everybody, every Halo fan listening to Sardonicast, because we've talked about Halo a few times, so.
Yeah, big Halo fan.
You have
big to. Big Halo fan here.
I mean, you said you played the first one, right?
Yeah, I've played them, yeah. Not as much as you guys. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's literally cool. Like my fucking childhood. And yet, unlike a lot of people who have properties in their childhood that they are very emotionally connected to and nostalgic for, I'm able to say when the new one sucks. I'm able to say, hey, the Halo TV show, it's kind of bad. You know? Seems like a lot of people have
a
lot of problems.
Halo 5 is kind of bad.
Yeah. Just because something's in your childhood, you don't have to be like, ah, if you say it's bad, that means I'm bad. Like, okay.
Yeah, the Mario movie.
Get your own personality.
Yeah.
As long as you don't say Ezra Miller's a part of your childhood, then
yeah, there you go.
You're good.
Ooh, dang, yeah.
You don't want them there.
Antonio Campos was a part of Ezra Miller's childhood.
Yeah. So, The Flash, everybody.
Yeah, speaking of stan culture and obsessive fans that can't admit when something's bad. We saw The Flash.
We have been hyped for this one, guys.
Hey, I love this movie. I love this movie, okay? It's the best superhero movie ever made. The Flash.
It's really funny that people are still playing defense for DC.
How?
Right, after all these years.
It's really funny that like for the Snyderverse in particular, this isn't even like, oh yeah, James Gunn reboot shit. This is like,
yeah, Alex and I were having a little convo, I think before last recording, about like the Star Wars fan base, how like toxic they are. And I'm like, yeah, like that's how like the fans of like the Joker are or whatever. But DC fans are kind of different. They're not just like racist or whatever, like Star Wars fans. They're just like, I don't know. They're kind of just like, they're kind of like, I don't want to use the word like stupid, but like, it's kind of like they're in their own like bubble.
It's like cultish, very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
weird.
I was looking at because of course the Flash is it's had its first weekend and it's not tracking too well. So there are a bunch of tweets about like how much it's made in its first weekend, and I was just looking through some of the replies on Twitter, and man, the amount of people with the hashtag restore the Snyder Cut. Not a single Snyder movie lost money, like trying to make make their way for their thing.
That's very funny.
But this is like Snyderverse stuff, and it still didn't do well.
Yeah,
it's got Zod, it's got, you know.
I feel like they wouldn't be in the state Snyder. They are in now if not for the Snyderverse.
Yeah, okay, you can say didn't lose money depending on how you fudge the numbers, right? But I was under the impression that, according to fucking Warner Brothers, like Batman v Superman underperformed. Like when they make a movie like that, they want like $1 billion and they didn't get $1 billion.
Yeah.
I think that's the movie that really unraveled their whole plan. I think that's where it started.
That was when they put a whole bunch of fucking effort and, well, I don't know, effort, but they put a lot of attempt in that movie. There was a lot riding on it.
No, there was some effort there. There was some effort. It just didn't, like, it didn't work. Like, the whole serious tone thing, it just didn't work what they were doing. Yeah, it did underperform, and it was critically panned. Like, I got a couple of fans liked it, but it was like, yeah, the theater experience for that was pretty miserable. A lot of critics did not like that movie.
I heard it
and
was
so
very
ever since they've been trying
boring.
To, like, it was, yeah. Oh, you haven't seen it.
It's a miserable film.
It is a miserable film.
I'll watch it eventually.
I honestly, like, no joke, I do like The Flash more than that movie. Not that this high praise of this film, The Flash, because it's got a lot of problems. But they've been trying to, like, do something more fun with it, which is, like, fair. I mean, the first 10 minutes of this movie is, like, a Justice League movie of its own, and it's, like, better than the actual Justice League movie, probably.
Yeah, you're right. It was
both the James Gunn one. It's Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Snyder one as well.
Sweden.
The original Justice League, yeah.
Yeah. Sensitive Joss Whedon.
Yeah. So I feel like this type of film, this The Flash, at this point, you know, especially with these Warner Brothers films, but this one in particular, it's kind of like a Frankenstein movie where, like, from beginning to end, like, we already know that it was plagued with, like, you know, production hell limbo and all that shit from, you know, when it got announced up until now. And then Ezra Miller beating up half of Hawaii and, like, you know, all this weird shit.
Children.
But it's clear that the product that we're seeing is not exactly what it was conceived when it was started. This is not like an artist's vision. This is like a Frankenstein movie where they're being like, let's try to be a bit more like Marvel here, and let's try to sneak this thing in here, you know, and maybe we'll have this moment that can like maybe help Ezra's press or something like that. It really feels like they're sewing together like this corpse into like a body, you know?
Yeah, with the multiverse thing, yeah. The multiverse aspect is like Spider-Man.
You know, this film was announced in 2014. Like, that's when it was announced and planned. Yeah, that's how long ago we're talking. Nearly a decade. And it is just a Frankenstein's, like, horrifying kind of celebration of whatever all of it has been up until this point. Like, they're really kind of trapped themselves into a corner.
With, like,
isn't
Zod
it also kind of like a betrayal of that? Because, like, trying to, like, celebrate what they're doing, then they shouldn't be trying to be like Marvel. But they know Marvel is more successful, so they're trying to. It's so embarrassing watching DC try to do Marvel shit, because it's just like, you don't even have a distinct voice anymore. You're still doing it worse. Right, so just try to do.
We're trying to do
thing,
both, because they found much more success with projects like The Batman, which everyone kind of liked and made a ton of money and was its own thing. And Joker, you know, like they have projects that people care about that just not whatever this is.
The Batman and Joker were definitely not trying to be like Marvel films. They were their own thing, and it was good at it. Whereas like this weird fucking Snyder Frankenstein bullshit.
Like, better than this.
Well,
yeah.
I don't even know what it's trying to do by shit. The end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's parts of it I like, but yeah, you're right. It is this Frankenstein's monster of like shit. Like, oh, I like that. And then it like abandons it and moves on to like other stuff. There's like so many plot lines in this movie that are just dropped. It's just like crazy. It's like, oh, we're just done with that now and we're fucking moving on. It's like, this is a 2-hour, 20-minute movie. Like, you have so much time to explore like all these plot lines and wrap them up. But, and there's like a lot of weird dialogue. But like the Ezra Miller situation, I don't know if that was like intentional.
I swear, I feel
like it's like Warner Brothers. Fuck
I swear they added like, in like, some shit.
Yeah, yeah. Like there's the like the drug line, like oh I'm gonna drug yeah. you or whatever. There's like the baby in the microwave that was being shared around on Twitter, which is like kind of like reversed footage or whatever. Like the clip they show
it was
online,
funny.
But you know, it was funny. Yeah, I was like, what's the context to this? Because I saw that before the movie, and then there's like. Like a reporter at the end of the movie, like Ezra Miller is like walking down the stairs or whatever after explaining like some stupid crap. And then it's like, what about the allegations? The reporter says to him, it's like a such a quick thing, but that's I'm like, right, yeah. Like, what is this? Like,
that must be unintentional, but
it has to be, but like, it's a 2-hour, 20-minute movie. No one like test screened it and said like, we can cut this stuff out. Like it wouldn't be missing.
I'm
anything.
I'm skeptical about like how much of this movie. I know that Michael Keaton was in talks to like be in this movie since before all of the controversy with Ezra. But at the very least, we can say the marketing in particular was in response to Ezra's allegations because they didn't let them
Definitely.
Do any interviews. And like, half of the marketing you see for the movie is just like a Batman poster. It's like The Flash. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Like, was Batman supposed to be this huge part of a movie?
Yeah. And they got the Supergirl actor to do most of the press. Mm-hmm. Do most of the press tour.
It's
yeah.
so funny.
And she's in it for like 10 minutes. Yeah. It's...
And she doesn't show up till like, yeah, like an hour and a half into the movie, maybe later. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that Flash trailer. There's one trailer where it ends with the Batman logo. It's like the big Batman logo, and then it turns into the Flash logo. Like the lighting changes,
yeah.
and it becomes the Flash logo. That's where I started to see like the cracks and like, because I thought this movie was going to do well. It was tracking really well, and then when I saw that, I'm like, I started to lose faith in it a little bit that it would underperform, meet below expectations. And yeah,
yeah.
it's not doing well. It's like way underperforming.
I was kind of surprised by that too. I thought once it like ended, when I saw it last week, I thought, oh, yep, yeah, audiences are probably going to like this. Like that was my like internal prediction.
Mm-hmm.
So I am kind of shocked at, is it just because of how close it is to Spider-Verse, which is just like.
Yeah, they're like trying to get the audience to like it. Like it has the elements, you know, like the crowd cheer moments where they all come out and it's like the three of them, like the two Flashes and Supergirl. And, you know, they want the audience to cheer, but my audience wasn't having that reaction. And I just like looked at the box office now, like the projections for it were actually really like 100 million or more, maybe even more than that. And the reality was like it made like maybe 55 million, which I think is worse than like the new Transformers movie that just came out. And like that was projected to do poorly. And it did
I think
better.
It's also worse than Black Adam too, which was like one of the.
That's right. Previous,
yeah, it is worse than Black Adam. And, you know, that was another huge, like, fucking bomb for them. And yeah, that, like The Rock, like, got pissed about it. But this is worse. This is a worse, like, situation for them. It's, like, kind of shocking. I didn't expect, like, the film to underperform that bad.
Is that three in a row or more? Because there was Shazam as well.
Yeah, Shazam was a huge flop. I don't, like, it's crazy.
Somebody posted this as, like, a little fucking thing on Twitter, but so I didn't fact check it, but it sounds about right. Like, four out of
yeah.
the past six superhero movies that have been released.
Yeah, because then I guess...
underperforming.
I guess it was the Suicide Squad before that, right? Which was around COVID time, so that suffered because of that as well.
I think, like, superhero movies yeah. in general, not even just DC, is what... They were talking
you know,
about.
Like Guardians yeah. is doing okay.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, it, you know, it's superhero movie fatigue, but there's just like so much other stuff going on, like the Ezra Miller thing, the fact that there's so much competition. Like this movie, it's making money now, but one everyone who's seen it is like gonna, that's the crowd for it. Those are the people who wanted to see it, and they're not gonna see it again. So it's like there's gonna no have a drop off in that way. Yeah, yeah. And then like, you know, the summer is so packed with movies. We were kind of talking about with like the new Mission Impossible. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's making money now because the IMAX sales and the RPX sales, but like that's gonna go away like in the coming weeks, and it's just gonna be like, it's gonna fizzle out very quickly, I bet. That's like my prediction on it. It's not like gonna have any staying power, like, you know, Avatar The Way of Water, which had like no competition at all.
Yeah, and
this
true.
Is like, yeah, it's so busy release. This summer.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. In terms of the movie, everybody's clowning on the special effects because, you know, there's a lot of times where people will say, like, that looked like PS3 graphics. I'm like, you're exaggerating a little. And now I'm like, okay, this actually this actually looks like PS3 graphics. like, holy shit. This is an unfinished movie.
Oh, but that was intentional, though.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That bizarre article with the director.
Yeah, it was the director, so yeah. It's Andy...
Machete.
It's kind of like a weird... Andy Machete, yeah. He did It and It Chapter 2, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, he came out like, the effects are supposed to look weird when he's time traveling because the lighting, space and time is warped or some shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, but what about like the rest of the movie?
I know.
When he's not time traveling?
He was very sneaky. I looked up the source for that interview. The article didn't say how their question was phrased, but it very heavily implies that they were asking specifically about, like, why did the babies look so bad? And so Andy Machete's sister, Barbara, who's a producer on the film, answered, like, as a joke at first, like, no, we actually used real babies. So that implies that the question was about the babies, is her joke answer. And then when Andy Machete answers, he essentially tries to do the thing where he's pretending the question was about something else, and he's answering, he's clearly talking about, like, because he used the phrasing, like, oh, it's like he's, in his vision, it's like a water world, so there's going to be, like, some warped kind of, like, perspectives and stuff. And what he's talking about very clearly is, you know, the color hue changing and, like, the buildings in the background getting kind of wavy and, like, the focus kind of... you know, the depth of field shifting. Yeah. Like, so he tried to answer the question without actually answering the question. They were clearly talking about the bad looking character models. And he was clearly talking about, like, oh no, cause like, you know, he tried to non-answer by answering a different question. Because if you, if you watch the movie, the babies have shit character models before time slows down and everything gets orange and electric-y and warpy, right? Those shit character models happen before time stops. And during that wavy, warpy sort of perspective thing, the woman falling out of the building does not look like shit. The babies do. Right? So it's not like, oh, he wasn't even addressing the look of the character models. And then, you know, that became its own headline. Other publications started repeating and reporting, like, oh, the director says that everything's supposed to look like shit, basically. So he tried his best to not answer the question, but now it looks like he's just still being bullshitty about it, which is just kind of funny. So
he did a Jedi mind trick on everyone.
Yeah, he did a Jedi mind trick on everyone.
That baby scene, though, man.
Oh, yeah, that was bad. Let me just get into spoilers.
Yeah, I guess spoilers for The Flash, but
spoiler
that,
discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
The Twilight baby scene, man. I did not think the movie was going to go there.
Yeah,
it is. I was laughing out loud, and I don't think in a way they were intended, because it is framed as like a kind of comedic scene. You know, there's like the dog falling, trying to eat like a hot dog or whatever. But it is just there's something really creepy and just repulsive about the look of this movie. It's It is disgusting, like, how it looks. Like, it's visually just so... it's fucked. I can't really think of a more eloquent way to explain its visual stylings aside from that. Everything from, like, from the character models, from just the color palettes of the movie, from Ezra Miller's suit, this new Flash suit that they're in. Just a disgusting movie to look at. Like, and also, like, you said that the Justice League kind of assemble at the beginning, and there's this whole action sequence with Batman coming in. Batman in broad daylight again. Like there's just,
yeah.
There's,
I don't know if that ever really comes together. And of course Keaton's Batman in the desert for like a whole sequence. It's just a lot of confusing choices, but there's something about it. There was something about this, man. I wasn't bored. I'm sorry. I wasn't bored by this movie. It was like, we often describe these movies as like watching money burn and like a car crash in motion. It's like, this is like a really potent one of those, you know, it really is like pathetic, you know, in a really entertaining way for me.
Yeah. Was it giving you flashbacks to like Quantumania? Cause I remember you saying like, that's your favorite Ant-Man movie because it's such a disaster, you know, it's,
I was, like the problem with Quantumania was it was way more boring than this, much more boring for me. There wasn't enough craziness. Where this was just like,
wacky.
It's so cursed. Everything about this is just so cursed.
It's so wacky. It almost could have worked, but it like didn't like all, entirely. I enjoyed like the opening baby scene. I'm like, this is so dumb.
I was like, give me more of this. Give me the absurd superhero antics of this level. This level of goofiness. It's such a bizarre tone shift with like how serious and self-serving those Zack Snyder movies to then wind up with this being the conclusion of that universe. It's like so inherently
it's
funny
hilarious.
To me.
It's so funny. Yeah.
From beginning to end, it does kind of turn into this weird Frankenstein's monster sort of thing. Like what's even left?
What really got me with the effects was that fucking the deep faked Supermans at the end. Those were unbelievable. Like it looks so fucking bad. It
looks
like atrocious.
Horrendous. And it's kind of funny that they're all CG. Even Nick Cage. Like that was funny.
Yeah, the Nick Cage. Like, I don't know how many people would even get that he was, like, supposed to play Superman.
That got the biggest reaction of my audience, though, Nick Cage.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a fun little Reddit thing.
Yeah.
The Tim Burton, yeah.
Yeah. I saw some, I don't even know how many, I wonder how many of them even, they probably didn't even get paid, right? They don't own the rights to the likeness of them appearing as that character. Right, I wonder how many of them, like some of them are dead.
I don't know, but it's right? Their face though, right? Like, surely their estate or something? Like,
probably their estate signed off on it or something.
Yeah, I think maybe Nick Cage got something.
I heard that, I think it was like the black and white Superman, like he was quoted attributing his involvement in the film to like his suicide. So people were pointing out how like weird it was that they kind of resurrected him, for the movie, as in
I was actually expecting the reference multiverse stuff to be way more egregious. Like that scene is egregious and awful and terrible and distasteful, but I was expecting a lot more of that, to be honest. Like, I don't know if my expectations were too low or what, but like considering like how bad something like Space Jam is or whatever, we've seen so much worse than this as far as that's
concerned.
It's
not as good as
Spider-Man.
Even
that Ghostbusters movie from recently, that had like maybe one of the worst like deep fake bring back like things I've ever seen. Like that is like insulting.
It's not even about the deep fakes anymore or the, I mean, they're just CG, I guess, but it's not even about the quality of it. It's the fact that they're just too fucking late to the game. Like, I just saw the new Spider-Verse, mild spoilers, canonizing all the previous iterations of Spider-Man, going like, oh, the Tobey-verse and the Andrew Garfield-verse, those are actually real and part of the connected thing. And it's like, okay, everybody's fucking done this now. Marvel fucking did, like, all this shit. You're too late to the fucking party. It's boring now. It's boring. I don't care. You're not showing me anything new. It's not surprising. I expect it at this point. Also, what the fuck? Why was the Superman black and white universe, like the universe itself was black and white? So we're now canonizing the idea that it wasn't black and white film in a color universe, but that the entire universe had not invented color or just doesn't have color. That's what you're canonizing about that? The universe doesn't have color?
Shameless. And back to the deepfake thing, I think Michael Shannon is Zod. I'm pretty sure they just, like, got him in a green screen room for one day. Like, sit here, we're going to record your face, and then we'll, like, put it on a CGI model. Because that's, like, you only ever see him, like, with
a
mask on.
He never takes that helmet off.
Yeah, right. Like, you never see his,
like,
body.
Like, Until Dawn or something.
It's kind of like that kind of thing, yeah. But it's, like, noticeable in the movie. And,
yeah.
Like, he didn't even need to be in it. Like, Zod doesn't need to be in it. Half the shit that happens is, like, yeah, like, the black and white Superman. It's just, like, reference humor. It's, like, what, yeah, Spider-Man does that kind of thing, like, much better. Even, like, No Way Home. The way they handle it there, it's much less egregious. That being said, I didn't mind Michael Keaton in the movie. I thought he fit fine. He's probably my favorite part. When he showed up, I was, like, entertained enough. But, yeah, they kind of drop him, too, at a certain point. And it just becomes, like, about this other kind of, you know, multiversal. What, like, it's so, like, convoluted. It's, like, time travel that becomes the multiverse. And, like, none of the rules make any sense. Like, we're talking about how frustrating, like, time travel movies
it's
are that make
maybe
no sense.
The
this
worst.
One makes no sense. Yeah, it doesn't make any
it's
sense.
It's maybe the worst time travel movie for, like, any sort of logic or consistency or not pissing
yeah.
me off in any way. It's maybe the
like
worst.
The whole point of the movie is that like don't mess with the past because it'll ruin the future. And then the end of the movie, he just messes with the past anyway. And
oh, it's
like,
fine.
Well,
yeah,
it didn't mess things up too bad.
He
it's
wanted
just,
to kill his mom.
Yeah, instead of it's Ben Affleck gag, now, yeah. it's George Clooney. Like that's it. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, that's not too bad. I guess I can live with that.
It wasn't even for a gag. They like they pretended as if. So I'm gonna make the analogy to the Spider-Verse thing again. Mild, I guess, spoilers for the Spider-Verse movie. In that movie, they're like, no, there's a canon event, and you know, obviously, in the next one, they'll find out. Oh, it's not real anyway, and you can save people. But at least they were trying to be like, oh, yeah, all the different universes, this sort of thing happens. You can't have, like, a canon event, in the concept of fate, and also changing things through time travel also. Right? You gotta, like, pick one. Like, the time travel thing makes everything so fucked. In the sense that, like, they kind of just decide that his mom dying is a canon event. They don't use those words in this movie in The Flash. They're like, this is fate.
Yeah.
This has to happen. There's no way you can not do it. But it's like, in the context of the film, it seems like the only reason that they couldn't save like the Batman and all that shit at the end and have Zod not take over the world, seems like the only reason he was not successful is because one of them wasn't helping. And he just stood there in the time travel waiting room where you don't actually have to run fast and you can just stand there and think about things. He was just chilling there. Like, the only... And then he fucking... The other one grows up like 60 years or whatever of, like, I guess just running and maybe eating, trying all these things over and over again. And he's like, ah, don't worry, I just gotta do one more thing. I've almost got it. It's like, it seems like the only reason he was unsuccessful is because he was doing that solo. If both of you were trying to do that, maybe you could have. Because you just decided, like, no, that's definitely got to happen. Well, you could have easily decided that exact same thing about your fucking dad going to jail. Why isn't that, like, fate? Why isn't that a canon event?
Yeah.
Right? But then he's just like, no, I can save my dad, but I don't actually like my mom, and I'm deciding that she can die. Like, you didn't even fucking try. It was the other version of you from the other universe that was trying. You're like, barely, you tried once, and then decided, like, oh, it's not worth it. I don't care. Like, fuck you. There's no motivation. You just kind of make up these rules, and you've decided, like, oh, this actually has to happen for the movie. Go fuck yourself. It's so stupid. It comes from nowhere. Pulled out of somebody's ass.
It's almost so bad I can't even, like, explain it. It's like, it would just take me hours.
It's so but annoying.
It was like, yeah, like, the time travel thing. It just, like, makes my brain fold in.
That's the thing, though, right? Like... The Flash, to me, I have kind of a fondness for this character for some reason. I've never seen like the CW show or anything like that, but I have seen like him in some of the animated movies back in the day. And I think this film's very, very loosely based off, it's a Flash story called the Flashpoint Paradox, which is kind of like a fun Elseworld thing where, yeah, the Flash, like he goes back in time, he figures out he can run fast enough and like breaks everything. And then, yeah, it's like a fun excuse to have. There is like an equivalent Batman character, but he's all wrong. It's like instead of his parents dying, Bruce dies and his dad is the one who becomes Batman. It's like this really edgy, violent Batman. It's like fun stuff like that. So they kind of subbed out instead of doing something kind of fun like that. They sub in, oh, let's have it be a reference to Michael Keaton to fill that kind of role and this and that. But
which
yeah,
was,
it's,
yeah,
it's
fine.
It also has to be because of the universe they've set up. They have to reference Man of Steel, which is kind of like the big plot point is that the Flash goes back in time, ruins everything, loses his powers, and there are no other superheroes that really exist. So Zod coming is like a big deal, and Zod's going to kill everyone, and they keep simultaneously, I don't know, because that Man of Steel movie was criticized so hard for like how vicious it kind of wound up being and how the collateral damage. So they're kind of torn with this movie. They, the end, kind of big battle is in the desert, but they keep cutting away to field, like the carnage that's going on in the city and like people being lifted up and crushed down into the ground in the most violent way you've ever seen. But yeah, it really can't find the balance. And then at the same time, it's kind of an origin story for the Flash as well.
Yeah.
Where, and this was something I didn't actually mind and didn't expect them.
Yeah. I like that too. It like becomes an origin story, like kind of like as he travels back in time. I thought that was like clever.
Yeah. Very late in the game.
Mm-hmm. But it's not like, you know, late. Like there's so many origin stories that are like the same kind of crap. It's like, oh, this is kind of a unique spin on
it brought out a change in the character. That's what I liked about it. Cause the Ezra Miller Flash in the Zack Snyder movies is quite overbearing, irritating, annoying. And there's like a moment in this where he meets himself and is like, God, you're really annoying. And then from that point on is kind of a way more serious character and does take things with a bit more like gravitas and treats things in a different way. And yeah, if the casting was different and it didn't have all the drama around it and he rewrote a bunch of things, that could actually have been a fun dynamic. And like the Flash having to, an experienced Flash having to teach a Flash that knows nothing and is an asshole and hasn't gone through the same loss that he has is, yeah, that's kind of a fun dynamic for me.
Yeah, that almost feels like something that's been planned. Like you said, this movie started being made like in 2014 or whatever. That feels like a very early concept for the movie that they were like, oh, this is a great idea. Let's like do this. But then it just gets like kind of derailed by other things happening. Yeah.
Can someone remind me what, so in just at the end of the Justice League movie, or I only saw the Snyder Cut, the Flash was used as like a way to solve the conflict by the end of it. And they were trying to run fast to do something. Was that also turning back time, or was the first instance of the Flash changing the past in this movie? And did that happen? That happened before this movie,
there was
right?
that whole running thread where starting in BVS, like the Flash appears like in a kind of unexplained scene, explaining to Ben Affleck's Batman that something has to happen or it's all going to go wrong. And it's not really explained until there's a bit more in the Snyder Cut with that horrible Jared Leto scene at the end, right? Where that seemed to be like how they were going to link it all together. It's like so poorly told and like planned out and plotted.
It never like really pays off because they like plan that out, but then like Batman vs Superman didn't work out, so they never made that movie where like Superman turns evil. I assume that's like what it's like hooking or linking to, like Injustice or whatever. And the Flash is supposed to go back in time in a future movie, and you're supposed to see that in like some future movie that never happened, you know. Instead we get this. And it's just like so many like inconsistencies to like the Snyderverse and whatever. Like, you remember Billy Crudup was like cast as the Flash's dad in Justice League, and now it's like they recast him. So it's like, okay, you know, you brought like all these other people back, but not him. It's a pretty like key character. They even bring back the Aquaman's dad in the movie. Tomorrow Morrison, but not like him. I don't know.
So what was the Flash doing at the end of the Snyder Cut to solve the problem?
That's the Speedforce scene, right?
The Oscar moment or whatever. Yeah, Oscar
what
cheer moment.
What were they doing?
What was he actually trying to... Yeah, it's a good question. He was running in a circle around... Jesus Christ, what the fuck happened in that scene? Why was he doing that?
It would help if the movie wasn't 4 hours long. I mean, then I might remember it.
Because in the context of like this movie, it seemed like they were just discovering that they could go back in time.
Well, he has a bunch of new like abilities. That was actually one of the things I did kind of like a bit more, was like he can like phase through things in this movie. Like, he can just vibrate his particles and just like fall through the floor or whatever.
Which I mean, if you're grabbing something else, would you not phase through the thing you're grabbing rather than the thing you're grabbing also phasing through things? Like,
what are you talking about? It makes no sense.
It makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, again, they clearly set up that like you have to, like if you phase through something, like your clothes will like not go through because it's like a solid
object. Unless you're just
object.
Really good at it. I don't understand how being good at it would prevent you from falling through the floor, though.
No, I think it's like because the suit.
Hmm?
I think the suit like makes him phase through like and stay clothed, but there's a point he like phases through a grate, like the 18-year-old Ezra Miller, and it's his clothes go with them. So it's like, what?
I'm just saying gravity should make him fall downwards no matter whether or not his skill of being good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
But the other rule I did kind of like that they added was that he's got to eat and like refill his hunger Minecraft bar in order to run fast. That was like something, you know.
It's kind of overdone though, I thought.
Well, he's got a fucking meter on his wrist, like this fucking smartwatch built into his suit, like a Fitbit or something. And the only purpose is to tell him when he's hungry?
I love that. That's hilarious. It's ridiculous.
Like, look at the time.
But this
I'm
is what I mean.
Now.
That's like the baby scene and the craziness. Because otherwise, he's got no limitations on his speed. And it's just like, man, he needs something to hold him back. You know, he needs his kryptonite of some form. And I like that was at least something.
He could just carry chocolate bars on him. Like, and he gets someone to throw a chocolate bar at him at the beginning of the movie. And then Batman's like, no, you got to get here right now. He's like, okay. And he just leaves it on the street. Like, oh, I couldn't have picked it up. Couldn't have picked it up off the street. That would have taken too much time. Go fuck yourself.
Littering.
Yeah, I think he's a tough character, the Flash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. he's broken. There's no rules.
Yeah.
He can change anything. He just changed time. He changed everything that happened in the universe. He was just like, I'm going to go back in time and change it.
Yeah, the Flash could basically do anything. Yeah, that's true.
Well, I just searched up what the Speed Force scene was, by the way.
Okay.
In Zack Snyder's Justice League, the Flash enters Speed Force, a layer of reality that can manipulate time in order to give the Justice League the final victory in the climactic battle. Yeah, I guess it's just that.
So, okay, when he starts manipulating time in this movie, the context of it in The Flash was like, okay, he remembered his mom dying, and then he ran, and it was like, this is the first time he ever ran, like, really angry or something. And then he's like, whoa, bro, I'm in, like, this time thing now, and I can just pick out where I want to go, and if I just keep running, I can go back in time. It's like, okay, he seemed like he accidentally stumbled upon it in this.
Yeah.
In the Justice League, it was built up into this, like, okay, you got to run as fast as you possibly, like, you got to run faster than you've ever ran before, ever. It was like, that was something that was, like, built up, like, an intentional, like you got to do this, and it's going to take time to even, like, try to do this. And it's like, okay, so that, and then now it seems like something he accidentally stumbled upon. And then the new version of the Flash, the one that literally just got his powers like that day, is able to run through time like just by essentially just being like, oh, I can do that. And then they just do it and it's fine. It's like it just seems so inconsistent with like where plot wise or effort wise or character wise that ability should be, you know, like. It's just they're just making shit up as they go along and nothing's consistent. It doesn't matter. And it's annoying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a scene very similar to recently in Spider-Verse where the Spot villain, I guess minor spoilers, figures out that you can go through like the multiverse. And there's some like funny shots of Ezra Miller poking his head through little portals and then like appearing. It's just hilarious contrasting it with that movie. It's like double the budget as well of the Spider-Verse.
The, literally the best looking film of the year and then the worst looking film of the year. And there's so much in common.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they all try to do this multiverse shit now because it's like so popular. But yeah, it's like a $200 million budget. Like, it's so inflated, the fucking budgets for these movies. It's like crazy. I don't know how they think they're going to make their money back.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
This should be more modest.
You're definitely not seeing it on the screen.
No, not at all.
No,
it's like they like scrapped scenes and rewrote them and then tried to get people to fucking animate something in a week and just release the fucking PS3 version.
Yeah. It does feel rushed. Yeah. That's probably what happened. I mean, you're not even too far off.
They probably
I think that's what happened.
Rewrote half the movie and put more Batman in it.
Uh-huh.
I will say that when Michael Keaton as Batman shows up, even though he did phone it in, even though it wasn't like a great performance or anything, it was a breath of fucking fresh air for me after nothing but Ezra Miller acting off of Ezra Miller for just like forever. I was in two moods. I was like just perpetually uncomfortable. I was either like bored or having a panic attack. And I was sober the entire time. I was like, okay, well, I'm not gonna drink today. You know, I'll be at my brother's wedding in a couple weeks. I'm gonna lose some weight. And I'm just like, fucking God, this was the worst time to try and do this. Like,
yeah, this film does need a stiff drink or potentially something stronger, to be honest, to maximize it.
It was the wrong movie to watch sober. It was bad idea.
It's just so much like it's hilarious to be like, it's so broken at its core. Like the whole point of the movie, right, is supposed to be like, it's this message of trying to move on, not like clinging on to the past, you know? But then at the same time, they have this like whole zombie CG old characters and bringing in Michael Keaton and celebrating all this old shit that like, move on. Like, you can't do this. It doesn't even make, and like they half-ass it too. Like the whole, it is referencing the Tim Burton movies, but like only very, very lightly. Like they barely really mention any of the events from those movies. Yeah. Even, well, I suppose there's some of the imagery in there. But like not broadly. It's like he's not Batman anymore just because Gotham has no crime. And he's just like chilling in his house, I guess. And he's like 80 years old. It's just a really weird, like desperate
reference.
Long hair. And it's like, who's this even for at this point? You know, like, it's so long ago.
Yeah, it's the references just feel obligatory. They don't feel like, oh yeah, this is a good thing that the writer wanted to put in the movie because they thought it would make the movie better. It's just, it felt completely obligatory. Like DC showing up to the fucking, to the multiverse meme, and A24 beat them to it. Like, fucking, you're too late. Go home. Like, get out of here. Like, just stop. Give up.
Like, yeah,
it's old. It's old already. You're boring.
Like the movie Old. Yeah,
this movie was a beach that made me turn old.
Yeah, you can make these things work. It's just like so complicated, and the movie's just like way too fucking long. I think I'd be more with you, Alex, if like, I think I actually am more on your side in terms of like enjoying parts of it, but it's like so fucking long. And it's like better than Jurassic World Dominion, maybe, because it's like that movie's also very long. I was just bored to tears by it. And this has like flourishes of like stuff I liked, like the opening, like the origin, like Michael Keaton. It just kind of get like falls apart. Like they introduce all this stuff with Supergirl and she becomes part of the movie. And it's like this, it just goes this other fucking direction at that point. And then the movie drops that. And then there's the stuff, like the Flash is talking about the time he like almost rescued a son and the father. They were like getting, you know, thrown to the ground in Batman, Man of Steel or whatever, that scene where like the machines like violently throwing everyone into the concrete. But like, so Ezra Miller saves this kid, but like nothing ever comes of that. You see like later on in like the alternate Michael Keaton timeline that, you know, the kid and the father are there and there's like the machine going, but like, did they ever like wrap that up in a satisfying
way? That's right. You're right. They don't do that because the conclusion he makes is that universe is just done for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just like you don't even need it.
Yeah. It was just such a shit thing to do. He's an asshole. It's just like nothing that you try to redeem this character and you have all these fucking sappy emotional music cues and like, oh, you don't know what it's like to lose a mom and like all this shit pretending Ezra Miller can even act. And all these, like, you're pretending to do this, like, real movie with, like, real consequences and real stakes. But at the end of the day, the character's a fucking asshole that doesn't give a shit about entire universes of people. It's just like, yeah, whatever, they're done for. And then immediately after, without even thinking that it contradicts itself, like, oh, actually, I'll move the tomatoes for my dad. He can get out of jail. I don't give a shit about my mom. She can die, whatever. All this entire universe of people, they can all die. Go fuck yourself. It's not a redeemable character. You're making everything up. You're an asshole.
Like, after all that, he just changes everything anyway. That's what I can't get over. Like, after all that, he's like, oh, let me just change the tomatoes in, like, on a different shelf. It's like, you just defeated, like, the whole point of, like, the 2.5-hour movie I just sat through.
There was no point.
Yeah, no conclusion. It's more open-ended.
The entire movie was it was entirely pointless.
Yeah.
With the whole George Clooney thing, it is just like, oh, yeah, you've messed it up even worse. Like, are you going to fix it now? Like, what are you going to do about this? Are you just going to leave it this way?
The character is such an asshole. and annoying. I can't
the
stand
character
them.
Is annoying. I've never liked that character. It's just they've always been annoying in like every movie. Batman, like, that dragged down the Justice League Snyder cut for me too. I don't like this character.
It was the most annoying part of an already terrible movie.
Yeah, I don't like the
Flash character
interpretation. Yeah. Didn't need to be this way.
Yeah. So you take the absolute worst parts of an already terrible movie, you make that the entire movie, and then you make two of them. You double it. And that's the Flash. Yeah. That's the Flash. It's a gigantic piece of shit.
So good. It's so funny.
Like, we're
and then you've got like weird tonal stuff, right? Like, because it is this horror director, and then there's this whole story beat with the Flash's mum being murdered. And like that scene, it's like surprisingly brutal. There's like a impaled knife in her, of like blood everywhere, and there is a fair amount of blood and violence in the movie. And then, yeah, that is contrasted with the baby scene, with like, it's a comedy. I feel like first and foremost, it is tonally very strange. Like it is very confused.
And there's no stakes anyway.
No.
Yeah, it's just like you never find out who kills the mom. Like, the Flash never went back in time to see who killed his mom, and then maybe, and then go back to the present.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to decide not to do.
Yeah, and then go back to the present and, like, find that guy, and then, like, find some evidence or so. We fucking frame him or so. I don't know.
I mean, honestly, yeah, like, if there was this whole, like, oh, you can't change too much in the past, you can't, like, interact with it, and that was all speculative, too. They kind of just decided that as soon as they had time travel powers. It was like a scene of Ezra Miller just talking to themselves, just being like, oh, well, you know, if I probably can't touch anyone in the past, maybe, even though you did that and you hugged your mom, but whatever, you know, like, oh, I probably can't do anything super huge, so I'm just going to move cans of tomatoes. I've decided based on nothing that moving cans of tomatoes is the extent of what I am able to do. One time, does the whole movie, and you decided, oh, that's too much, and then you move the entire shelf of tomatoes, but not once did the character even try to, like, I don't know, stop the death of his mom by you know, beating up the person that did it, or even spectating and just finding out who did it.
Yeah, you know? That's what I'm saying. You don't have to adjust anything.
Yeah, you didn't
just
even have to, like, interact with them.
And then go back in the present and find the guy, and just, like, find some evidence or something, maybe frame him, like, do something so, like, people suspect him and not, like, the dad or whatever. Like, maybe that would have been better.
You can go back in time to when the murderer of his mom was a baby, and then phase shift a can of tomatoes into the baby's brain. And you're just moving a can of tomatoes. You're not really doing anything else.
You know? Oh, yeah. Or even, like, take a picture of it happening. Like, just, like, with your phone, and then go back to the present.
That's,
like,
kind
of
funny.
Look at this look at this photo of this guy murdering my mom and not my dad. Yeah, this is like, you know, like, and that's what just happens with, like, time travel.
This photo was dated from the future, but that's, ignore that.
You could just explain, or like the Flash could come in and say, well, I actually, because, like, people know the Flash in the universe, and, like,
you
could do, like, a thing where,
that's
like,
true.
Like,
the Flash can just show,
like,
up
Barry's,
and be
like,
Yeah,
exactly. Barry's like, I gotta go to the bathroom quick. He leaves, and then the Flash comes in and then does that, and then leaves the room again, and then Barry comes back in the courtroom.
All of the rules that the character decided for the movie were based on a conversation that they had with themselves, and then later based on Batman making spaghetti. And they're like, you can't do spaghetti, man. It's gonna get entangled. You can't do that. And then when he moves the can of tomatoes, he changes and makes an entirely new scenario, like he did. So first can of tomatoes, he goes, everything's fine, parents are alive, goes home. Oh no, there's another Flash. Oops, I forgot that I'm entering someone else's universe. But then they do that again. Where's the second Flash in that universe at the end? He just shows up in court. He's like, oh, I see you've made it to court. And he just takes someone else's place, clearly. Did he kill himself? Did that happen off screen? Why was there no second Flash in that universe? That was never addressed. You change things again. There should be another Flash there.
Yeah, that's true. There should be another Flash.
The time stuff's just so, it is just broken.
Yeah, you could, like, do hours of, like, analysis on it.
The character's broken. It shouldn't be a movie. Why make this? Just fucking release Batgirl already, you know? It's not even going to be good. What the fuck was this?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what makes this one, like, so special that they, like, release this one and not Batgirl? I mean, they both are probably terrible. I'm just like, like, what's the difference?
Because I was actually surprised they didn't, I thought they were good. Do you remember when the X-Men movies got to a point where they were kind of just fucked as well, and then they did that whole time travel
thing.
They
reset it.
Ended on, yeah, let's reset this.
But that was better. Yeah,
that was a lot better.
And it was also the first one.
Yeah, you know? It's also entertaining. Like, it's just an entertaining movie, and this is like, I don't know, these parts
desperate.
Of it are entertaining. It maybe.
Oh yeah, it's definitely desperate. It's pathetic, but it's hilarious. And I just found it like,
yeah.
Considering like the slew of this shit we've gotten recently. Yeah, Black Adam, Thor, Love and Thunder, Ant-Man, Shazam. Like I was way more entertained by this. Like this to me is like a unique type of bad. Like you just don't normally get in this space. Like this is crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, what we're talking about right now is a crazy film.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Yeah. At least I, like, am passionate about it in some way. I don't know. Like, yeah, what is it? Black Adam. I was going to say Bad Adam. Black Adam is, like, so boring. It's so bland. And this is, like, yeah, it does all this crazy stuff, and it's so wacky that, yeah, I was, like, engaged in it the whole time. But I mean, it's still too long. Like, it just goes on for so long, and it just drops so many... like key plot points, and it just feels like such filler at times. And it's like, yeah, it makes for a good discussion.
I'd be more on your guys' side here in like the entertainment factor. If like, to me, Ezra Miller acting as this character is like nails on a fucking chalkboard. And so having that doubled and then the entire 2.5 hour runtime is literally just like, it's Guantanamo for me, essentially. So, no.
It's Final Fantasy Spirits Within. I prefer this to that, honestly.
So, yeah, that's how I feel. That's how I felt about The Rock in Black Adam, where he's just such a charisma vacuum. Just like you can just see his ego, like in his cape, you know.
That was a boring, sleepy movie for me.
Yeah.
Whereas this isn't so
there
boring.
Is just something wacky about it, and that. It did have that dynamic going for it, where the two characters did contrast, and it did bring at least something, as opposed to nothing.
This is mad trippy. Is that Batman? Is that Batman?
So you're making me want to watch it again right now.
It's so awesome.
Pretty good. That was a pretty good impression. I gotta say.
Yeah, it's etched into my fucking skull. It won't leave. It's like one of those really bad, like but infectious songs. You know, where it's like so cringe, but there's enough that just
Friday.
Sticks in your memory that you can't get it out. Is that Batman?
But they just kept doing things. They just kept doing things. And I was like, there's no way they're going to go that direction. Like with the baby scene, I thought, there's no way they're actually going to do this. And then they do it. And then they start doing like this evil Flash thing. Like they tease it early on in the movie. He's like punched out of that weird ball Zorb thing that he's in by evil Flash. And it's like, oh, they're going to do evil Flash. This is like hilarious. He's like covered in spikes and he's got this crazy character design. He's like,
yeah.
That was just so dumb.
Bizarre.
And then, like, they, like, fucking 5 minutes before they spell it out, Flash 2 gets a scar on his face. And even though it's excruciatingly obvious that that's just the other Flash, but later, he's like, oh, the scar on your face. It's like, you're figuring this out, like, way after. Anybody in the audience could have possibly figured it. Like, this was not necessary. Like, what do you mean the scar? Like, how about the fucking the gigantic dagger sticking out of your arm? Like, why did you do the scar on the face thing? Like, that seemed like an obligatory, like,
oh, the thing to differentiate and so you know which one of us it is. Doy.
Yeah.
Fuck you. It's so stupid. I can't. We should talk about another movie. Are we done?
I guess.
Maybe. Like, I don't feel like we are.
I don't know if we ever will be is the problem, though.
I feel like this is so much.
It's so
but
dense.
That's, like, part of the charm of it is, like, it's such a weird, wacko, bizarre movie. Like, genuinely. Like, it did hold my attention.
Yeah, my attention was held. And, like, that suit they put, like, the other Flash in that's like made out of like Batman's suit, and it's like It's like locked his head in place and it just looks so fucked up. just everything about this.
Yeah. Super bizarre movie. It does feel like kind of patched to like a patch job for like 5 years of like working on it. Like even just like the script maybe. But yeah, it's like it kind of feels unfinished and like it's so weird. It's such a weird movie. I don't know what to say.
It's even. Very unique. It's like,
Yeah, it's super unique.
But it is representative of everything that's wrong with movies at the same time. You know, it's like a uniquely
definitely
terrible summary of the last couple decades of film.
Yeah, like all the worst parts of superhero movies, all the worst parts of like fan culture.
Yeah. Just,
yeah, this fanboyish
type the multiverse stuff, nostalgia.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, the references. It's, yeah, like Spider-Man does this much
it's a satire without intending to be. You know?
It almost kind of is, it's kind of intentional, maybe.
I guess we'll never know. I guess it wants to have its cake and eat it too. One thing we could also mention that we didn't before is the music. I found it to be fucking... So the composition, zero personality. Zero, like, just completely bland, like, oh, temp music sort of thing. And then for, like, 10 seconds, it did this techno thing. And then never did again. It was like, oh, okay, we're doing some, like, electronic instrumentals here. And then, like, okay, never again. And then all of the licensed music was just so fucking pathetic, like, attempting to be cool. Like, oh, yeah, it's fucking, you know, we're gonna have some rock music, and this is cool shit. This is a cool character, bros. Like, fuck off. And they were trying so hard. It was really annoying. Music made it a lot.
Yeah, this character. Yeah, because the music, I feel like this character's had, what, 2-3 different themes? Because, like, Danny Elfman made one for the original version of Justice League, but then Zack Snyder had a different theme or something. I don't know if it's a new one again or if it's the Snyder. I have no idea what's even going on with this universe. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like such a mess.
Yeah, they're calling back to like 5 different movies, <It's> like, or even more. It's fucking wacko. It's pretty funny though. Like, I don't know, our discussion of it.
Yeah, because do you remember the end of Black Adam was a tease for the Henry Cavill Superman?
Uh huh. And this just never comes into play, like at all. Yeah. That's like done now, right? It's just done. Like
that's not happening.
That's
yet.
Also
yeah.
What's so fucking pathetic about. Like, every DC fucking movie, no matter what they they keep teasing these different things, but it doesn't matter. Like, it's not, like, you can't expect it to ever happen.
Yeah, it means nothing.
So what's the point? Like, oh, get excited for this. Like, we're not going to do it, but, you know, maybe in your imagination you can think of something.
Yeah, no, the second the credits ended, right, like, I just left, because I don't give a shit about, like, staying around for the end credits.
Oh, you didn't stay the post-credit?
You know?
But, like, and people were giving me, like, the look, you know, like, this idiot doesn't even know what he's missing out on. As I'm walking, like, back to my car, I just, like, Google the Flash end credit scene and just read what happens. It's like, oh, it's a stupid Aquaman.
Yeah, you did not miss anything. The post-credit scene was fucking terrible. You did not miss anything. When it was over, I'm like, I can't believe... Yeah, I can't believe I sat through the credits to watch that shit.
I know.
Like, I was honestly like, that was so stupid. Like, it would have been better.
It's an Aquaman thing, right? Because that's another one that's still coming.
It's like, so Aquaman is still Jason Momoa in the universe or whatever. Because like he's,
that was the only reason they did that, was to say, hey, you should buy a ticket to Aquaman still, because it's not pointless in the grand scheme of the DC universe, actually. this is still canon. So just make sure that, you know, still buy the ticket. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good.
It's so people don't feel like it's for nothing.
I'm so curious how that movie's going to perform. Because that first Aquaman movie made like $1 billion, didn't it? Like, is there any chance the new one's going to even
probably
be close to that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
I hope so.
I think
it'll
people just saw it because Jason Momoa's in it. Maybe people don't even like. Maybe making a successful superhero movie is just like not even appealing or giving a shit about the whole extended universe and how it fits into the things.
Yeah.
And just like ignoring these super fans. Because if the super fans were enough to make a movie successful, then the DC universe would be successful. I think you just have to make it massively appealing in terms of like just cast a fucking big actor in it and make it look kind of fun. That's what Aquaman did. Yeah. It was just kind of fun.
That's kind of like the test, right? And then this movie kind of underperformed. So yeah, it didn't like hit at all. But the thing like with George Clooney at the end, it's like, okay, you want to do like the whole thing of like setting up other actors. Oh. Like it should have been Robert Pattinson at the end. Robert Pattinson comes in as Batman. I would have been like, oh, okay. So this is in the same universe as like the Robert Pattinson Batman. Maybe that would have been terrible.
No, but don't you know that news though about this director is supposed to be doing a different Batman movie? With a different actor.
Yeah.
And Matt Reeves' trilogy or whatever it's going to be is its own thing.
With George
Clooney?
Which
is kind of good, to be honest. No, I think that's just a gag.
Yeah, probably not.
I had a eureka moment right now. I think I've actually cracked the code. So I was just thinking like, okay, yeah. You know, like make it kind of fun, cast a really big actor. And so now I'm thinking like, okay, why was Aquaman successful and not Black Adam? It's because Jason Momoa had his shirt off. The marketing for the movie is shirtless Jason Momoa. The marketing for Black Adam was The Rock completely clothed. No shirts off The Rock. Shirts off Jason Momoa. Aquaman 2 will be successful if the marketing has his shirt off. That is my prediction.
But you get to see Ezra Miller shirtless in this. You see him naked.
Yeah, who cares?
It was like a whole scene. It was funny. Got like such a weird looking body, I thought.
There's some shots in the movie where it looks really weird.
Some shots, it's very fucking bizarre.
Oh, it's so good. This is the funniest film ever, man.
Really, they should just not be in the movie. Just fucking recast.
Yeah.
They should have recasted them forever ago anyway. They should have recasted them, and they doubled down by doubling the fucking performances of that fucking actor. Like, come on.
Yeah. That's what's so crazy about it, too.
Doubling
it's
down.
Not just one Ezra Miller, it's two. Like, after all the shit that came out, like, now you get to see two of them together.
Exactly!
Like, it just keeps getting better.
Yeah, right?
They were, like, so fucked with that decision. They had no idea, like, how fucked they would be.
They really should have just recast The Flash and, like, Batman vs. Superman because he was, like, fucking terrible for that part. Like, that should have been the end of it.
He's
there.
The most annoying part!
Yeah, but they didn't. They like, you're right. They doubled down on it, and it's just like
a literal
it just hasn't
down.
Worked out.
Oh yeah, because another detail I read was, you know, there was all that drama with the actor who played Cyborg in these Justice League movies.
Yeah,
apparently this Flash movie was originally going to have him playing a large part, but they couldn't do that. They wrote him out after the actor protested. What happened with Justice League? So it's just like every angle you look at it, like this project was just.
Sorry, they protested what happened with Justice League? What do you mean? What happened?
You didn't read
I'm trying
it?
To remember
was
the exact details,
Ray
but
Fisher?
The actor,
he
they
said
had
it
some issue with... No, they. I think it was more of a Snyder, taking Snyder's side type thing.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. He was saying he was like cut down out of the Justice League movie for maybe, you know, kind of discriminatory reasons.
Yeah.
And that's possible, Because like that movie was like supposed to... Yeah, it's supposed to, like, make his career.
Fisher, who played Cyborg in the superhero film, accused Whedon on social media of gross, abusive, unprofessional, and completely unacceptable behavior. So that's what the drama was about. It was about Joss Whedon
and
that
so
whole situation.
Is it confirmed that they were gonna have more of a part in the Flash movie? And they took...
That's what I was reading.
So that's also just kind of doubling down. Like, you want to complain about being written out of movies? Well, we'll write you out of another movie. We'll edit you out of this one. That's so funny.
Yeah.
You think that's racist? Wait till you see what we do next.
Yeah.
We're going to put two Ezras in the movie and no black character.
In the Snyder Cut, Ray Fisher's in it like a lot more. He has much more of a presence in the movie, a lot more material. Yeah, that's funny.
So
in this
funny.
Movie, it's just like one line. Like, where's you know, where's the Cyborg? Oh, he doesn't exist in this universe. And, like, that's, like, the end
bye-bye.
Of it.
Bye-bye. Smell you later.
Yeah, pretty fucking funny. Yeah. I think he made it out fine, though. Like, he got out clean compared to, like, being a part of this shit. It's like, maybe it's a good thing he's not a part of this, Ray Fisher. Because it's like...
He does the bullet.
Yeah.
We cast him with Jonathan Majors.
Yeah, exactly. Might as well. Recast for the guy who played Namor.
Recast everybody as Ezra Miller. Fuck it. Why not? Non-binary. They can play every gender. Fuck it. Just make an entire movie of Ezra Miller. See how well it does.
That's what this was.
Yeah, exactly.
being
Ezra Miller is the film.
Being title. Ezra Miller. Yeah. What you guys want to get into
yes.
ratings? Or you have
yes,
more
I
to
do.
Say? Okay. Yeah, I think I would give it a. It sounds like I've been shitting on it so much. I give it a 5 out. Yeah, 10 out of 10. I fucking loved it. Yeah, like a 2.5 stars. What, 5 out of 10? I honestly, that's what I give it. I'm like,
I'm exactly
it's like,
there.
Yeah,
with you, man. 2.5 star. Like, just right down the middle.
I think it's better than Batman vs Superman and like even Black Adam.
Yeah, I would watch this again. You know, like, and laugh, you know,
maybe
you know,
eventually
with a drink or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not right away. but just compared to some of the stuff we've been getting like this, I was enjoying myself. Definitely not for the right reasons, but I was at least entertained. The worst thing these films can be is boring, like an Ant-Man, like a Black Adam, like Thor, Love and Thunder, like these. God, they're just unbearable. But this is
pretty
hilarious.
Like,
we just got an hour long conversation out of this fucking mess. And it is hilarious.
this crossed the threshold, went past boring and into annoying, unbearable torture, and so I'm giving it a 1 personally. I can't. This is an easy 1 out of 10 for me. This is the worst movie I've seen in a long time. I can't. I'm not watching this again.
Which makes it the best movie.
Nah, yeah. Not every 1 out of 10 is a fucking Neil Breen masterpiece, you know. Some are like Megan is Missing 1 out of 10, you know, where it's just like so, irritating.
I just reserve 1 out of 10s for like Food Fight and like that kind of shit. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, shit that's like literally unwatchable.
This movie really is that bad for me. So, yeah.
I get that. Okay. I do understand.
Yes, thank you. Speaking of Michael Keaton, we all decided it would be appropriate to contrast The Flash.
Had to be done.
With Birdman. Or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance, which is 2014 Best Picture winner. And also, somehow, my favorite movie of 2014. That doesn't happen often, where those two are the same thing. Yeah. The third Iñárritu González, Alejandro González Iñárritu film that we've talked about on the podcast as a recommendation. We've talked about The Revenant. We've talked about Amores Perros. And yeah, what do we think? It's a, I guess, spoiler discussion, although I don't even, I guess there's some things you can spoil about the movie, but it's pretty wild ride, and it's mostly just about the experience and the filmmaking and the performances.
Yeah, it's not really the plot.
The meta commentary that somehow gets more relevant as time goes on. It's been like 10 years.
Yeah, I was surprised by that because I haven't watched this film in a long time. And I was shocked at how just continuously relevant it is with this whole space that we're talking about, especially right after, of course, Keaton himself being in The Flash, being in the MCU as the Vulture, and then Morbius, of course, as well as Vulture again.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Vulture, Vulture, Batman, Batman, Whopper, Whopper.
Right. I fucking love this movie. I think it's great. It looks amazing. It was super ambitious, like one take. It's not really one take. It's like cut here and there, but extremely long takes in this film. That was like the kind of hook of it. It's just like really unique. I feel in a lot of ways. Like I love like the fucking drummer.
Yeah.
It's like the whole score of the movie. you see the composer of the movie in the movie, like just playing in the background. It's just like does whatever the fuck it wants. And it's very confident and it's like bizarro fucking reality it creates. And yeah, I don't know, it's like it's also something, it's super different for him as well, like because a lot of the movies we talk about for him are like extremely violent, extremely like realistic.
Yeah, this
and,
is
like,
the funniest one.
like thematically deep, and you know, so is this, but yeah, it's like a comedy basically.
Yeah, dramedy
and,
comedy.
Yeah about like this washed up kind of guy trying to like get his career back, and yeah, like all the tie-ins with like the Batman, you know, persona, even like, you know, he's known for playing this character when really he's like much more of a
could be a much more like complicated artist, but he's just kind of like restrained and like brought down by this role that like everyone knows him as.
Yeah.
And it's like really interesting like character study in that way. And it's yeah, and it plays around with like fun visuals, and it's just really great. It all really works together like beautifully, and some amazing acting, great supporting cast like Edward Norton, Emma Stone. I think you, I saw in one of your, I think Adam's review, like Emma Stone was, like, so, like doing the Amazing Spider-Man 2, like at the yeah. same time,
which is great.
Like,
really,
she took like funny. She took like a week off to like yeah. do this movie, and yeah, it's like a great fucking movie. Yeah, it shows like she has some range or whatever.
And not just that, yeah. but like the thematic kind of like, oh, all these actors are doing superhero movies. Like Ed Norton was in The Hulk, I think, before that
yeah.
started
yeah,
right. too, and like. There was a line in the movie where they're talking about like who are they were going to get to replace the guy that got hit by the light, and they're just like, oh no, fucking Robert Downey Jr. is doing Iron Man, and like all these other like, oh, they're all swallowed up by yeah. this machine, and it's like that's literally happening to the actors in the movie, and now especially more relevant with Michael Keaton because he's like he's returning to do it. He's like doing Birdman 4 essentially. Like,
right. Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. And it's because they offered him so much money, like they make it impossible for you to turn down, mm-hmm. basically.
Well, I like that it wasn't sense, yeah. just the ideas that they were getting at in terms of like commenting on actors and like fame and ego. It wasn't even really about the money for this character. They did mention like, oh, he refinanced his house or whatever, and his mortgage, and you know, he put everything into the play, but it was more about like the self-sacrifice he was making to essentially just feel better than other people. Which is, I mean, they just pretty much flat out said it. He's like in his internal monologue with Birdman saying like, this is where you belong, above everyone else, like as he's flying over the town. So I like that, you know, even though I don't know if they tried to get the rights to Batman, I like that they kept it like a flying sort of superhero, like with wings, and kept in the thematic imagery yeah. of like, oh, I'm above other people. And like, you know, he has this thing where he's like, you know, I had that moment where I thought, if I died, George Clooney's face would be on the front of the paper and not mine. It's like, what is this self-serving, like ego-driven quest that you're on? And how self-destructive it is. I like that the movie is introspective and critical about artists as much as it is also about critics, which I think not a lot yeah, of people
yeah.
realize.
Yeah, the whole film is extremely. Yeah, self-deprecating, yeah. like from every angle. That's part of what's so great about it. That whole superhero angle is really strong. Not just for the commentary of what's happening and has happened in Hollywood broadly and how it's just sucked everything up. But yeah, it does just really work as like a metaphor for artistic creation, kind of manifesting that intense like ego balanced with the. You know, that overbearing, like self-critical inner dialogue that the Birdman character is to this guy. Like he's simultaneously the represents his most successful point in his life and mm-hmm. everything he thinks he wants, but it's also the thing that's plaguing him and pulling him down and like
yeah.
won't let him escape and seems to be pushing him towards the drink, towards all this like misery. And yeah, it's like he doesn't even really know what it wants. And it is like this self-serving ego trip. But at the same time, there's this whole angle of this accidental artwork he kind of winds up making. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's one of the things with this movie, where I feel like I would almost despise this movie if it ended at a certain point, you know, where it all builds up. It's all these, rehearsals. It's like three or four rehearsals and it ends on that final one with a suicide attempt, basically, and that which is greeted with the applause. I feel like if the film ended there, I feel like that would be such a like weak, obvious, just trite way to end it. But that whole hospital scene where he reads the review and hears mm-hmm. what the critic says, and the critic does interpret it as this like new form of acting, and it's just like, yeah, like what is this space in like how an audience interprets something and how critics interpret something and how much is intentional? And that's like a really complicated concept to explore and think about. And I love the way it comes to a head with that hospital scene and the way it comes together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do like the way it explores its themes that way. It's, and showing both sides of it, having the critic in there who's like a really nasty person, like just berating him, saying she's going to ruin the play even before seeing
it.
It's a difficult thing because that can go lady in the water wrong, you know. Like if you want to address the critics, if you want to talk about that in your film, it's a delicate subject matter, and I'm curious how Tarantino's going to do it with this film he's working on.
You don't want to sound like fucking Eminem, like just writing bars like, why don't you people like my music anymore? Like bah, coffee pot. It's like, okay,
that's what I love about The framing of Ratatouille and like, the food critic is like, that's a really clever way of doing it as well. And I feel like this is more like that movie, with how delicate it is with it. And it's simultaneously like quite obvious and in your face with what it's saying, but it's exploring the complexity of what it's trying to say with it. And yeah, it's not about like these obvious plot payoffs or anything like that. It's actually intentionally left quite vague a lot of the time, especially with like how it ultimately concludes with Emma Stone looking up out the window. Mm-hmm. What does it mean and what does it represent? Did you read anything about the like original ending supposedly? Which is supposed to be this like weird, like Johnny Depp, Pirates of the Caribbean thing, where like Johnny Depp was going to be there with, with like a Pirates of the Caribbean poster in the background. It was supposed to end on a gag, which apparently they thought was like a bad idea at a certain point. And like I'm Johnny so Depp. Glad they did.
Wait, like
they were trying to, they were going to try and make some point about this like cycle that like all these kind of big actors that get sucked up into this world, like get into, and it was going to like shift to him or something ridiculous like that. And I'm so glad they didn't wind up going with that.
That's a weird. That's even weirder than the ending in the movie. And the ending...
So there's a lot of ways it could have gone wrong. And it does come together very clean.
Mm-hmm.
Super, clean. And just, like, entertaining. Like, I just love... The fucking comedy in the movie is so good. Yeah. It's, like, consistently funny. Consistently funny lines. Great visual gags. Like, him running out in the fucking... In his underwear in, like, Times Square. That's a great, like, fucking sequence. So well done. It's, like, it's so ambitious. And it's pulled off, like, perfectly.
Tense as well, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a bottle movie set in mostly one location. And it's still entertaining, like, consistently. And they leave sometimes, go to other locations. And just the way it balances all that.
Yeah, the lighting's always changing.
I love the time-lapse moments, like as time passes, the camera like still doesn't cut, like it just stays in one spot and like and go into the next scene and whatever. Like it's just like a brilliant, like it's just brilliant. I think the scene is really brilliant. I like a Spoonie. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing: is there's a lot of movies that exist that do the like, oh, we're pretending like this is in one shot sort of thing. Some people have called this movie gimmicky for it, but I cannot disagree enough with that, because unlike 1917, where it's like I can't think of any like immediate reason why thematically that movie should be all in one shot, and also it isn't, and it doesn't, you know, like there's just like a hard like I got knocked unconscious moment, where in this film, like the tie-ins that it's making to theater, where that is an unbroken shot, right? So we've already got the idea of like theater performance and life imitating art, and how anybody who's been involved in a theatrical production will be able to tell you by, you know, watching this movie, like the emotions and intensity that naturally build up, which are aided by the fact that it's all quote unquote in one shot, they replicate the same pressures and the same stress and anxiety related with live theater performances in a fucking uncanny way. The way that everything builds up and the pressure intensifies in the story is aided by the fact that you never really get, you know, this breakaway kind of like, oh, shot, reverse shot, you know, like reminding you that it's a movie, seeing both characters. Like there's something happening, whether consciously or not, in our brains when we're watching something that feels like an unbroken shot, that even though we know that it's not doing a one-to-one ratio of time, like it's not, the film doesn't take place over the course of 2 hours, even though we know that, the way that it's presented somehow still has this like unbroken natural feeling buildup that just, like the intensity is so much more. I feel like the fact that it is shot in this way makes the reveal of the gun being real like a really impactful kind of like stomach churning, what's the word, like you know, it makes like a real visceral kind of like uncomfortable moment where like I'm not sure.
Yeah, stressful.
Yeah, like it helps the emotion. It helps the actors build off of each other over the course of a scene too.
Yeah, it makes the performances stronger too. It doesn't like cut away. Yeah, exactly. They're like in the moment. Yeah.
Like in the Flash movie, you just cut to Ezra Miller's face and there's already a tear that somebody fucking squeezed out of a eyedropper onto their face.
Yeah, a lot of like single tears in that movie.
Yeah,
like,
a lot of single tears.
Like, he cries at a single tear. Yeah, that was kind of odd.
In this movie, you see the characters like build up their emotion, like they're acting, and you can see them get from happy and comfortable to broken down and miserable over the court. You can see it happening in real time with the character, which is awesome. Yeah. I love it. There's so much benefit.
It just makes you appreciate the performance more too. I feel like it also just adds an extra, like it makes the movie more weird and more unique.
Yeah.
Just that element. It's just another, it adds to the weirdness of the whole thing. And it makes it like it gives it a personality.
Because it's quite dreamlike, and sort of, time doesn't flow in a linear way. And it there's nothing frustrating about that. It's part of, the allure. That whole flow. But just that choice, like on a technical level, all of the problems that brings that they have to solve, like pacing, it becomes like a different beast when you have to like plan everything out in such a dedicated way, you know, because like I guess you have less freedom in the bay, you know, like you can't, the script has to.
You can't show it to a test audience and then remove a chunk of the movie that they didn't like.
Exactly. And it affects everything to like visual effects as well, like the amount of like mirror shots.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of painting out, a bunch of visual effects you wouldn't even consider.
And that's also thematic too, you know, because it is about like self-image and reflection. There's like so many mirrors in this, and it's like, okay, but that's also real in the environment too. Like there's a thematic purpose for it and a practical purpose for it. I love when it can occupy both of those needs, those necessities simultaneously. Those are some of my favorite things in movies. That's why I love so much about like most of Charlie Kaufman's movies, is like everything that appears in it fits like a puzzle piece. It feels appropriate and it feels perfect, and it's like, okay, this is there because it needs to be there, and it helps the fact that it's there. You can look at like even some of the design choices of, let's say, his nose being shot off at the end, and the bandage is like, it resembles like a beak. It resembles, you know, his eyes are kind of darkened too, even, you know, maybe it's a bit overkill even. Maybe it should have been more subtle. But there is this sort of visual synchronicity, and as George Lucas once said, it's like poetry, it rhymes, you know?
Yeah. His phrasing of that was weird. It's like, it's poetry so that they rhyme or something. Like, it's like weird phrasing.
Yeah, but it even manages to make these kind of story beats that can go wrong. Going viral on YouTube being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like that's written in there, and it's one of the themes. And there's that really good monologue he has about how he regrets, recording his daughter's birth instead of just being present. And like feeding into this whole kind of idea, of the ego, of always like wanting to record everything and be this figure and not being present. And I just love the way they're able to explore all these like really complex ideas, like just enough.
I agree. Michael Keaton in this movie, just to speak like his performance, I thought he was really fantastic in this movie.
Yeah. Mm.
And he shows a lot of vulnerability, I feel like. First of all, he's like walking around in like tidy whiteys or whatever. It's like the first shot of the movie. Like he's like naked, and it's also like thematically he's very naked as well.
Exactly.
This idea of like, you know, his celebrity, his like, he's known as like Batman and like all the baggage that has like come with it. And it is a very personal movie for him and probably for any other people, but especially him in the movie. And it's like, it almost like transcends his character, and it's just about like in a way him. And I love that about the movie. It's very vulnerable, personal performance, which is great. That's what I want. That's what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He really gave it his all, and I will forever be pissed at Ready Edmain for accepting the Oscar for best actor that year.
Yeah, it's a shame.
If your speech was anything other than, hey, why didn't Michael Keaton get this award? No, Michael Keaton won. Stop the count.
Mm-hmm. That's why he's like, Michael Keaton, like, oh, all right, I'm not going to get an Oscar. Let me just go back to being Batman again.
Yeah, fuck it.
Like, fuck it.
That's
yeah.
the Adam Sandler approach. Like, if I don't get nominated for Uncut Gems, I'm going to make so many bad movies.
Yeah, it's like the Tom Cruise approach. Like, he's not going to get an Oscar, right? Well, just fucking be in a bunch of blockbusters and make billions of dollars, which is not a bad decision either, I feel. But, yeah, I feel that he should have gotten it for this. Definitely.
Yeah, it was
great
the only
performance.
Chance. Because, like, now he's phoning it in again, and it's fine, whatever. Like, you don't have to prove yourself.
He probably got paid more than this entire movie's budget to be in the Flash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly.
That's what I mean. They make it impossible for you to, like, turn it down. It's like, okay, it's probably, like, a week's worth of work, maybe more. Maybe a month or something. I don't know. But, like, it's probably, like, such a small amount of work.
Yeah, he wouldn't be, like, present in any of those action scenes, really, unless it's, like, close to his face, you know?
Like, it took much less work for him to make that movie than this, and he probably got paid, like, much more for that film. But, you know, that's art. You gotta, like, sacrifice a lot.
The only action scene in The Flash where he wasn't wearing the bat suit, they had his hair, like, covering his face. Remember he had, like, weirdly long hair?
Yeah.
So it's just like, okay, just you've written this to make it so that it's a stunt double, I guess.
Yeah, and just like the state of like superhero movies, and yeah, you're right. Like it's so relevant, and it's gotten worse. Like since that movie, like it's just gotten much worse with all these fucking actors. Like there's like huge talk and like all these Anthony Mackie, I think. Like you know, there aren't movie stars anymore. You're just like in superhero movies and. It's just so oversaturated. Yeah. Like, that, like, Kraven the Hunter movie that's, like, a sequel to Morbius, technically.
What?
Like, the trailer for that just came out. Yeah.
What?
It's, like, another character.
With Taylor Johnson, yeah.
They're setting up the Sinister Six universe, you know, with Spider-Man. It's like, fucking nonsense. Like, it's so crazy, like, where we have gone since this movie. Like, I feel like you couldn't even make this movie today because reality is, like, much, like, stupider than like anything you could write.
Yeah, beyond parody. Yeah,
it's like become a parody of itself. It's hilarious.
Yeah, that's what the Flash is for sure. Yeah,
unintentionally. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
What the fuck? I was not aware of Kraven the Hunter.
Kraven the Hunter.
You're not aware of Kraven?
I had no idea this was a thing. I'll react to the trailer later. I guess I'll add that to my
Yeah, he's Kraven the Hunter. Like he hunts animals, but apparently in this movie they made him. Not a hunter. They like because that part's too controversial. Like they made him like a peace loving like animal lover.
Oh,
to appeal to like PETA.
He's like a vegan now,
which is like defeats the whole point of the character. But
okay,
I digress. That's aside. It's not related.
Yep,
to what we're talking about. it's so dumb. Yeah. What else you have to say?
No, I was shocked by that budget when I looked it up. $18 million. I suppose it makes sense, I'm sure, despite some of the big names we're talking here, just to work this director, I'm sure they're willing to take a little bit less, and yeah, there is the one location, but yeah, I would not have guessed that low if I had to.
Yeah, like, it's nuts.
Put my money down. Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
Fucking Inarritu had, like, the 2014 and 2015, and like, wins Best Picture and then has like the most successful movie of his career with The Revenant.
I believe he won Best Director for both.
Yeah.
I believe it was like,
I think so.
2 years in a row.
Yeah, wow. 2 years in a row, Best Director.
Which he deserves. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty fucking great. Yeah.
Yeah. Back to back.
Both those movies are awesome.
That's insane. Mm-hmm. That's actually nuts.
That is insane.
One year later, The Revenant.
A lot of range. That's
absolutely nuts. Yeah. I love this director. I understand why some people are like, he's a, you know, he's a so pretentious or whatever. It's like, I get it, but it's one of those things where it's like it's either going to click with you or it doesn't. But even putting that aside, like there's so much talent and coordination going into his films that it's like, okay, even if you write it off, let's say thematically, or you don't like the story or something, or like let's say you wish that the references to social media in this film were like a bit less heavy-handed or something, like you can't deny the fucking the talent and passion oozing out of this man's projects. Like he is so fucking good at what he does. Yeah, like all of his films look so fucking beautiful too. Like,
sure,
the visuals are crazy.
Yeah, I might feel that way about some of his other movies, but like this one to me just proves that like no, he's just like he made a comedy that's like really funny. This is like a great movie, I feel. Yeah, like you know, I feel like anyone could enjoy this movie. It's weird, but it makes it memorable. You know, I'm glad it's weird. I'm glad it does all these insane stylistic things because that makes it like just not so fucking dry and like not so like forgettable. You like remember shots and images for like years after seeing it, like rewatching. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember that. I remember this scene, like, you know, like Edward Norton fucking flipping out in his underwear too. And, you know, he's great. It's like so much funny, wacky shit in the movie. That's like, it's almost like shocking it won Best Picture. Cause it's such a, you know, it's so out there, but also like, it's like not the kind of movie you expect it to be when like you hear about it, like, oh, this washed up actor or whatever. It's like, oh, okay. But it's like fucking a lot of fun. It's so much fun to watch, and it keeps you engrossed with like that one take, and it, you know, it just moves constantly, and it's got such a great energy to it, and it looks beautiful. I love like the long lenses, like the wide lenses. I mean,
yeah, because you can get more like in the tight space that they're in.
Yeah, it's easier to film those things. Yeah,
yeah,
and, yeah. It's just like great. Probably set design even, because I bet they had to like move a lot of like walls and whatever to get certain shots, and you don't notice it at all. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you said with the mirrors, you don't notice any of that. It's so great. It's so well done.
There's a couple things to think about, like production wise, like how fucking incredible the lighting looks at so many points in this film, and realizing you can't just like, you know, you can't just like cut and then set things up behind the camera. Like they need to be, most of it, at least, like in-universe lighting, essentially, which, again, I guess setting it in like a theater production location gives you access to having more lighting options in there. So it kind of works in the context of the film, literally, and in the context of making the film, right? And then there's also a fun thing to think about with the production, how many times the camera just you know, does a little turn, and you see one of the stagehands or one of the production people, one of the crew, just kind of like reacting to something, or like, and then they're gone in an instant. And I think that not only is that funny comedically, there's these other people that are just like, what the fuck, like watching all these celebrities have their breakdowns and all this drama happening. But I think it's also, so you know, thematically supposed to kind of remind us about all the other people working on these artistic pieces, whether it's theater or film, that get really little to no recognition but are just as crucial of a part of these projects happening, right? Like they're there, and the movie kind of just acknowledges them for a second and then continues on to this like egomaniac actor who's trying to become relevant again, and it's like that's where all the attention is. But it, like, there's so many other people that are there, and the movie is constantly, you know, every 10, 20 minutes or something, there's like a reminder, like, oh yeah, there's like other people here too, you know, not just the stars.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. I like that it does that.
I've got to shout out the casting of Zach Galifianakis in this movie. Because I'm just looking at like his IMDb, like what he was in around this time.
I know.
Jumping from Hangover Part 2, that really lame Puss in Boots movie, The Muppets movie, The Campaign, that horrible comedy, Hangover Part 3, and then jump to this. And it's like, man, they must have really trusted him as a fit for this character. And it does really work. He really sells that role. And he's like he's kind of the only person who's, how does he phrase it? He's the one keeping it all together. He's like his one friend, and he has like a sense of warmth. Just like a nice, like different performance from him. That really works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
I like how, coming back to like the soundtrack, I love how it's not, you know, it's diegetic, but it isn't. You know, you see the character playing the drums. You even, like, in the bar scene, right when he's, like, having that confrontation with the critic character, you can hear the piano go from, like, kind of diegetic, echoey in the bar, and then continue as he's walking outside into, like, part of the soundtrack before the cello comes in, and we get that nice kind of, like, you know, his... Like, he goes drinking and has that weird kind of, like, self-reflection whole sequence. Like, I love the soundtrack in this movie. And I think that the percussion and the... Not just the choice in instrument in the sense that, like, oh, they chose to only do drums. But the fact that it sounds so improvised. And it's a soundtrack that feels like it's not... necessarily like a score to the film, but it's like a response to the film. It's like actively reacting to things that are happening in the film and the moments and the beats that characters have. It's like there's a person drumming there that is watching them and doing and just kind of like improvising based on what they're doing, like a live theater performance, right? It fits perfectly like a puzzle piece, the soundtrack choice. And it was a very bold and really unique one to make chaos at the time, too. Despite Whiplash coming out the same year, weirdly enough, you know, before that point, there wasn't this focus on like, oh, drums, you know, like they both kind of just got made at the same time. But yeah, the improvisational nature to it is just so purposeful and it works so well.
Yeah. I agree. You're right about like the improvisational like nature of the movie. Even though I'm sure there was like there isn't much room for improv when you're doing like a long take movie.
No, not
at all. But like it just makes everything feel like it's improvisational. And I'm sure like there's certain beats of like the acting, like when you're doing takes that long that you just come up with on the spot, like certain deliveries, and they just like stuck with it, kept with it. It does like add to the theater kind of feel of the movie, and even with the lighting, like even scenes that like you said, like there's scenes with like practical lighting, there's scenes with like non-practical lighting that are like really well done. Like they probably had like, I don't know how you even do that, like film like a 360 like long take without even like seeing like any light sources in the movie.
I'm sure they were really overhead fast people behind the cameras.
And, yeah, it's just like you don't see any crew members. You don't see any.
You don't see the
like,
shadows. You never see the cameraman's shadow or anything. Like that's really impressive.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, and there might have been some digital trickery in there too to like remove some of that, but not a lot. I mean, it's pretty seamless. There's maybe like one shot with like Michael Keaton walks into the bar, like that kind of like that cut kind of stands out to me. But that's like a minor nitpick for me. Like, you know.
Yeah, when he was coming back from the bar and he had the key in his hand, that was a weird one.
Mm-hmm. It just like kind of fades to black almost.
But otherwise, like it feels fucking seamless.
Yeah,
my favorite one was Ed Norton and Emma Stone like making out, and I guess they fucked in the rafters or whatever. But the camera goes over top of the rafters and down into the rehearsal where Ed Norton is there. And it's like, okay, well, I didn't see a cut, but there had to have been because he can't run that fast, right? Because nobody can run that fast. That was a really cool shot. I loved that.
Yeah, that was great.
Just the whole Edward Norton character. I think he's my favorite character in this.
He's fucking great.
What a great role.
Yeah.
He's incredible in this.
He's
I absolutely love that fight scene with him and Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
Like Michael Keaton gets upset with him because he kind of takes his story, right? And in that report and then he spins it around on him and lies about his childhood abuse, and then they like grapple each other to the floor. That's one of the funniest, like like ping pong type scenes.
It's in like the trailer, and there's like something going on with him too, Edward Norton, and like his career, like because this is after the Hulk and that movie didn't really work out. I think there was like some dispute, I don't know exactly what happened, but he didn't want to be part of like the MCU and that kind of thing. I don't think he wants to do more like artistic projects like this, and it's like he really shines as just an actor in this movie, and he shows his range, and like
the fact that like his character's like a fucking douchebag, like it's like I don't know. I found that really
he's quite
funny.
Intense.
Like he's so like it, you know, his ego is so like inflated and he's like so full of
he's
himself.
Like, yeah, typical method type. Yeah,
yeah, he's like method actor, right?
Like the concept of his character is just like truth at all costs, even if it's damaging to everyone, right? And so it's exploring that as a character type, and it's, you know, an exaggerated version of how certain actors are, right? Because certain actors are like really so committed and driven into their own I guess methods or their own ego even, right? Like I love that detail where it ties into his character when they're playing the truth or dare game and he only ever picks truth because he's like, oh, okay, you know, like the truth is always interesting, right. The truth, it like that's his character. He never does dare, he always does truth. Yeah, I love
that's
how that
true.
Fits.
That's true, yeah.
At the beginning of the movie, he's like meditating, he's floating, internal monologue, Birdman shit. And then the Skype call goes off on the laptop. And the way that it's presented in the film and the mixing is like hard left in the speakers. I thought when I watched the movie, like, oh, someone's phone is going off. I thought like that was the, but watching it also, even still now, I'm wondering if that was intentional. I'm wondering if that was sort of like a meta, like audience, you know, social media or like internet, just like interrupting the art or interrupting the audience or sorry, the artist.
Like it's supposed to be jarring. Yeah, I can see.
Yeah,
that.
Like
yeah, it's definitely like supposed to be jarring. Yeah.
It's not only serving a purpose of like, oh yeah, his daughter's calling in the movie, but it's also kind of like, oh, you know, like is technology impacting the theater going experience, or like is the audience impacting what films and filmmakers are like? We can even go further into this about like think of the imagery of Naomi Watts and Edward Norton, and they're taking a bow on stage while they're like crying and arguing with each other, and she's like, "You're a monster," and they're pretending to smile, and the entire crowd full of people is just standing and applauding at them. And they're essentially just applauding at their own suffering without being fully aware of it, while the actors are pretending like everything's fine. Like, think about that for a second. Like, that's a great that's a great piece of imagery there. And there's a lot to chew on in terms of like what that's saying about the industry and, you know, actors
and how audiences interpret what they're saying too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Not even realizing like the suffering that someone's going through and kind of just being there to be entertained. Yeah. There's a lot that just fits in this movie. Also, Andrea Riseborough was really great.
Yeah. One of the first things I've seen her in, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like lots of small parts that are great. Like,
yeah.
Not the main people.
The scene with her and Naomi Watts was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Where that, like the beats of their performances and how, you know, she like leans in for the kiss and Naomi's just like completely frozen. She's like, oh, you know, like really accurately portraying someone kind of like frozen in shock, like not sure what to feel like in their tracks before being like, do it again.
It's such an odd scene.
It's odd, but I, you know,
it's like, but that's what I like the movie.
The first time I watched it, I was like, oh, you perv. You know, like, fucking ER,
it's just,
ER
like,
you just
throws you
want
off.
To see the make out or whatever. Like, you always kind of question
who
the director's intention when you see, like, oh, yeah, these, like, attractive women are going to make out now. But watching it now, I'm like, fuck. I mean, like, there's a, it works in the context of the story. They're both kind of fed up with, like, the men in their lives at this point, and they're both kind of, you know, they're kind of using each other as like a support system at this moment when the people in their lives that should be supporting them are kind of treating them like shit, kind of ignoring them. And they're both, you know, both of those characters are dating egomaniac just trying to make it so that he's the front page when he dies versus egomaniac trying to have this weird obsession with truth to the degree where he's gonna like rape her on stage in the service of what, like a good performance, right? And so you have these like two extreme examples of just like celebrity in their own bubble monsters, I guess, and they're dating them. Like, yeah, okay, like, in the context of that, they would probably just, you know, try other options.
But that's what I love about the Amy Ryan character showing up, his ex, where she's kind of, she represents everything he's lost and everything he's kind of longing for.
Maybe the most grounded character.
Exactly, yeah. It's a good way of giving him a bit of backstory without it being like heavy-handed exposition or whatever. She leaks out just little bits of information about his past life and like why they broke up and why he's in the situation with his daughter that he's in, and his previous kind of suicide attempt he brings out with the jellyfish in the sea and trying to drown himself after getting caught cheating on her and stuff. And yeah, it brings out some honesty in him.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to interpret and pick apart here. This is another film, much like The Flash. You can kind of talk about it forever.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's got an amazing rhythm. I love even when it kind of abandons its own style to try and parody and remind us of the style of other films. You know, you get the full soundtrack, you get the explosions, you get the CG, you get the mecha bird, whatever kaiju thing going on. Almost not
the
quite.
The CG is like so odd.
Yeah.
It's so odd in that scene. But it's just like, to me, it makes the movie, like, it enhances it. It's like almost like self-referential.
No, it's great. Like, I watched that scene and I was like, these effects look a lot better than The Flash.
They do, or at least they're like on the
it's
same
like
level.
10 years earlier,
they do.
Yeah, true, for a fraction of the price.
Right, that's what I mean. It's like making fun of those movies because we do have movies with like effects that are worse than like the effects in Birdman.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like, you know, even like Black Adam had like Ant-Man and the Quantumania or whatever. Just like horrible CGI. It's like, and it's like so overkill.
Yeah,
that scene is like fucking overkill with like the explosions and like. Like fucking crazy stuff. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah,
pimply faced gamers cream in their pants. I think they said
it's like Free Guy. It looks like Free Guy.
Yeah, I want it to be more like that scene. Why couldn't the whole movie be like that scene?
Mm-hmm. Well, some people got confused. I swear that there were like people that rated this on Amazon or something. Like, I don't know if I'll be able to find this, but I remember seeing when this movie was released, people were like, I thought it was gonna be a real superhero movie. Somebody in my chat, like, I did a watch along stream to this, they were like, yeah, my dad brought me to this movie, we thought it was gonna be a superhero movie, and then we like left. Oh, yeah. My dad took me out of the movie.
That's crazy.
So funny. And that's like kind of, I mean, that is kind of what it's commenting on.
Yeah,
you know, which is great that it's happening. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. It's just like movie theaters are like places for like parents to bring their kids just to like shut them up for 2 hours. It's like, yeah, just put some superhero movie on. Yeah, they
too
don't want to like
satire,
think.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It's pretty like fantastic in that respect. Yeah, I don't have a ton more to say. I just love the movie. I love that it's weird. I don't even read into it like as much as you do, Adam. I'm like, that's just, they make out because it's weird and because I didn't see it coming.
Sure.
Because it's just like, because it's fun. Because it just does whatever.
Those are the best movies, though, are ones that function in an interpretive way and also an entertainment way. Ones where it's like, oh, you don't have to force yourself to watch it a second time and want to read into it and be like, oh, I guess, like, yeah, sure, there's some, like, thematic things if you want to do homework. Like, it's a fun movie, and it encourages you to watch it a second time because it's entertaining and it's well-made and there's, like, artistry behind it. And then you can dig into the thematic and hidden deeper meanings and what it's trying to say, the meta commentary if you want, but it's not necessary for the experience of the movie, really. It's just there.
Yeah.
It's just there because they care, which is great. Like, those are the best movies for me.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
Yep. Yep. Love it. Yeah, I guess, again, yeah, we could go on forever about this movie, but yeah, doing this and The Flash in one episode is pretty packed, so we might
so might tied in.
Yeah,
wrap up.
Yeah, might want to wrap it
up. Yeah, go ahead. Give it a rating.
There was some, I'm just gonna mention a couple lines I really liked before I give it a rating. There was one that was like, look at what's left. I'm the answer to a fucking Trivial Pursuit question. Like, that's a great way to,
that is a great line.
Compare like relevancy, you know, it's like I'm being a has been or whatever. And then I loved when Zach Galifianakis had like kind of like a Tim Heidecker moment, and he's like, he's the full Saudi prince is bringing his wife, and you know, Martin Scorsese is gonna be there. <It's> like,
<yeah. laughs> he doesn't know that, who that is.
Martin Scorsese. I love that. Yeah, fucking great movie. Best movie of 2014, in my opinion. Just love it. And 10 out of 10. Easy 10.
Yeah, one of the best of that year for me, too. I'd give it a 5 out of 5 stars. Same I gave The Flash.
You just reminded me of another great that visual metaphor that Emma Stone whips out with that toilet roll that she learned in rehab. Like contextualizing the ego of humans and like being obsessed with like legacy, like this main character is, just pulling off that one piece of a whole role to contextualize how long humans have been around for. I'm slightly lower than you guys. I do love this movie a lot, but I'd give it a 4-star, a high 4-star, for no particular reason. I can qualify.
Sure, that's fine.
I just like other movies more. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine.
Boo.
Nice. And we did it. Can't wait for Birdman 2.
I felt that.
Yeah. Can't wait for Birdman 2 and 3 and whatever. Birdman versus The Flash. Dawn of Justice.
Ready for a couple questions then?
All right. Question time.
Cool. Yeah. Let's do a couple questions here from the Sardonicast community. Head over to the suggestion thread on the subreddit if you want to leave questions for future episodes. Just like Aldian the Red did. What do you think is the main reason for Elemental bombing at the box office? Is it Pixar losing their creative spark, or audiences becoming disinterested in animated films that aren't tied to a pre-existing IP? It's not the latter, in my opinion. I just think they're boring films that they've been making lately. You know, like
I think
Lightyear was boring.
You
know, like Strange World or whatever it was called, boring.
Elemental. I saw Elemental. It was fine, but I wouldn't give it a glowing recommendation. Yeah. I wouldn't give it like, oh, it's amazing. You have to go see it. Like, go watch it on Disney Plus. I think that's one of the reasons, too. People are so used to these coming out on Disney Plus, you know?
It looks like a Disney Plus, like straight to Disney Plus thing to me.
Yeah.
But
they'll
man,
just
I was
wait
shocked.
For that.
I looked at the $200 million.
Right.
Oh, for that.
That's what I mean with these budgets.
Million.
Like, you're not going to make your money back on a $200 million movie when there's like so much competition out there. You know, there's like tons of other shit coming out.
It's like, what? Does it show in the movie? Is it like, does it show visually?
It looks good. It's polished, but it's, you know, like, God, guys, like, is there any way to like fucking rein it in a little? Like, the Spider-Verse movie you said last episode was $100 million. That looks great for $100 million.
The first one was like 80, 90 as well. There's like no excuse.
Yeah. I just don't understand these investments. Like, you're not going to make your money back on that off some, like, kind of average, you know, family film. Like, it's not bad, but it's not great either. And it's just, there's so much competition out there. There's so many other movies out that kids want to see, like The Flash and Transformers and Spider-Verse and, like, other animated movies. And yeah, the Disney Plus thing, I think, really impacts it. Like, people just wait for it to go on Disney Plus. It's just like so many factors at play there. And yeah, it's just kind of like a whatever concept, you know? I think they're really, I saw like Shea Frillis' tweet, I think it was. They're like kind of like downplaying Lightyear. Like at this point, it seems like they're kind of like embarrassed of it, or, you know, like a lot of those people got fired who worked on Lightyear from Pixar. Fired. No pun intended with like Elemental. Fired. But. Yeah.
Dude, fire. wow, dude, fire.
Whenever I see that fucking film, it just makes me think of Sharkboy and Lava Girl. I'm sorry.
Elemental?
Yeah.
the girl, the fire girl, and the water guy. I just can't disconnect it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. I don't care how few movies someone watches. Anybody can watch that trailer and be completely unsurprised by anything that it, like, even the most basic film goer of all time is going to look at that trailer and be like, I've seen it before. How do you make something that looks so unappealing that, like, nobody wants to watch? Like, people, you know, even though people gravitate towards things that are more familiar, like, doesn't look good. Like, the animation looks shit. It's not like, it doesn't even have like a hook like Inside Out. You're just doing like, what if,
yeah,
what if water and fire were like Romeo and Juliet? That's it.
It's not a great movie.
It's just,
it really
the concept
isn't a great
looks
movie.
Like shit.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing interesting about it, that.
Yeah, it's super uninteresting.
It's just not, it doesn't stand out. It's just not a great movie. Like, if it was great, people, it would find an audience eventually, but it won't. Like, it'll just, cause it's not, just, it's not great. It's not, it's, you know, it's just like another movie. That really hurt it, I feel. And yeah, like, on top of all the other stuff we just said. Yeah.
Yeah.
If only it was a great movie, if only I could, like, see it and go like, wow, guys, you know, that movie's not doing great, Elemental, but it's, like, actually really good, and you should see it itself. Like, you should go see it in a theater, see it on the biggest screen you can. But I can't say that. Like my little cousin,
no word of mouth.
She's, like, 12 years old. She's, like, Elemental. I'm like, yeah, you can see it on Disney Plus. Like, I can't even recommend it to her, you know? She's a child. Like, it's just not, it doesn't, you don't need to see it. You don't need to see it. It's just, that's it.
No one needs to see it.
You know? And it's sad.
It's like, was anyone expecting that Puss in Boots to be as good as it was? That really spread by word of mouth, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if you just make something good enough.
If it's a good movie, people will fucking tell people.
And this movie will come and go. It'll do okay or not, but it'll do like, you know,
it's
it'll
doing
be like
worse
in the top
than The Good Dinosaur, apparently.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty fucking bad. But I mean, like, it'll be in the top five for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and then it'll go away. Maybe not even that long at this point.
Same director as The Good Dinosaur. They really just keep dumping things on him. They're like, you take this one.
He really has to, like, carry, like, Pixar on his shoulders. I mean, it's like, just take these awful concepts and, like, make a movie out of it.
They're kind of pieces of shit.
I think, like, Good Dinosaur's worse. Like, Good Dinosaur's worse. Lightyear is worse. Like, those concepts are just so dumb.
Yeah.
This one's, like, yeah, it's not a great, like, I'm just so tired of, like, the blobby kind of, like, art style. Like, Inside Out and
Soul. It looks very uninspired. In the same way that, like, The Flash is like, a unintentional satire of superhero movies and DC movies, like, Elemental looks like an unintentional satire of Pixar movies. Like, we've just hit Pixar that point where it's just, like, what are you even doing anymore? You're making something that you think people will be expecting to see if they watch a movie that's a Pixar movie, you know?
I guess this probably explains that Toy Story news or whatever. They're making another one and Woody and Buzz
Toy
are coming
Story
back.
5.
That was probably their last financial success, right? Toy Story 4. Cause like, what is it? Like Turning Red didn't set the world on fire as far as money. Luca.
I mean,
Turning Red's a better movie.
That was a COVID Disney Plus release also.
Yeah. Soul, I liked a lot, but, I don't know. Yeah. I think it was hurt by COVID as far as money is concerned. So they're a little bit behind, I think, as far as that stuff's concerned.
Everyone's just going to wait for Disney Plus because they're used to it.
Yeah.
They're like, it'll be in Disney Plus. It will be on Disney Plus in like a couple months. Maybe not even that. Maybe sooner. Yeah. Just such a waste. Such a shame. because I love Pixar. It's just like, I don't know. They need to like figure something out.
Yeah, I love what they used to be. They just haven't been that exciting for many years.
Well, like Turning Red was good. I had my issues with it, but
it was all right.
I might even raise my rating on that to like a 7. I think that's what I gave it. 7 out of 10. But yeah, it's...
That was, more memorable than some of their recent stuff, but...
I feel like compared to a lot of other kids' stuff coming out, it's like, they still make good stuff compared to like the Mario movie, obviously. Like, Elemental was better than the Mario movie. It was definitely better than that. Yeah. But I just can't give it a glowing recommendation like a Puss in Boots or something, which I haven't seen yet, but that seems like great. Or Spider-Verse, I guess that's a better example. Like that's a glowing recommendation. Like that was great.
Spider-Verse has kind of eaten all these films' lunches.
And
even DreamWorks to a certain degree. Yeah. Like I don't know, do I end on this question? So speaking of from Herbal Coast. Thoughts on the new DreamWorks film Orion and the Dark having a Charlie Kaufman writing credit? There's a few images that have just come out about this film. Looks kind of interesting. I was looking up the like children's book it's based off. It's got like a cool art style. Yeah, there's potential here.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say too much about a movie that's not out yet, but or doesn't even have a trailer, but
yeah.
Someone told me that the people that worked on the movie said that they're trying to keep it as close to the script as possible, and then someone else told me that like it's not even a recent script, like he wrote it like a decade ago and then it was just kind of sitting in limbo and now they're finally using it or something. Like I don't know what's happening. So we'll see what happens when it comes out. Like I don't know if they're going to make a DreamWorks kids movie existential crisis or anything, but you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I'm excited to see it. I'll buy a ticket, you know, support my boy.
Last time he had writing credits on a DreamWorks movie, it worked out well.
Yeah.
Kung Fu Panda 2. How are you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great movie. Yeah. I'll see it.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Charlie Kaufman.
Do you two want to do one more question?
No, we could do. I mean,
I could sneak one more. This one might just be for me and Ralph, though, I'm afraid, Adam, from the Double Darkness. Have any of you watched Andor? It shares a showrunner and composer with Succession. It has by far the best dialogue in Star Wars and is the best of Star Wars since the original trilogy. The first couple episodes are slow, but after that, it gets great.
Ooh,
what's that?
I don't know about you, Ralph, but Matt, I was shocked by how good this was.
It's a Star Wars show, Adam. You know Star Wars?
What?
Did I write that question? Because I fucking agree with everything that guy said. It's the best fucking Star Wars show, or it's the best Star Wars thing, like, since, mm-hmm. like, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Or, like, maybe Revenge of the Sith, or, like, you know, one of those. Like, it's so fucking good. I was like watching, like, this is incredible. This is
it's slow. Like the first couple of episodes are slow.
Yeah.
It doesn't really reveal its hand. And then when you start figuring out what it's doing, it's like, oh, this is awesome, man. There's like this heist episode, like six episodes in. It's so fucking good. It's so like exciting.
Yeah. Andy Serkis is in it. He has like a whole arc, like later on, like in the later half of the season. That stuff is amazing. It's like such a good, like I said, it's not even good Star Wars show. It's like just a great science fiction show.
Yeah.
Like, but to like any standard, like, yeah, I would put it up there with Succession or something like that. Like great music, the acting, like, is it Stellan Skarsgård? He's amazing in the fucking show.
Some great monologues.
Amazing monologues and scenes like that. Like, I would actually recommend it to Adam. He would probably enjoy it. Like, mm-hmm. even though he's not a Star Wars fan. It's such a good show. And it's like, you know, it's like sandwiched in between all this other like Star Wars content that's like junk. But it's really
good dialogue.
Yeah. It's really well written and like great characters. And yeah, I just love the tone of it. And it like nails that like Star Wars dark tone like really well. Like it's
but
like
apparently
a
had role, like a yeah. like a $250 million budget or something.
Oh nice.
Like,
I
don't think it's getting nearly the viewers like that Obi-Wan show or whatever did, but mm-hmm. I think it's confirmed
it's
to have
show.
Like one more season, so hopefully they can just mm-hmm. wrap that up nice and clean and just have this like little gem in amongst the shit.
Yeah, because it made me want to watch those other shows, and then the other shows, yeah, they're pretty shit, like, or at least mid. Like, the Obi-Wan one's very mid, and, you know, I don't like, you know, there's, like, Star Wars fans who are, like, very, like, I said earlier, like, racist or whatever, like, they very hateful, just people. Mm. I wish they would just, like, be happy with, like, the good stuff. Because, yeah, they were, like, attacking, like, this actress from the Obi-Wan show, and, like, Ewan McGregor had to come out, or, how do you say it? Ewan?
Ew.
He had to like come out and say like, guys, can you like not be racist? Like, like when like the main actor of the show has to come out, it's just like Star Wars fans are like so fucking toxic. And I feel like they've ruined like what it could be. But like when I see something like this, I have like a spark of hope for like Star Wars and like that their properties and like how they handle it. Cause yeah, this is like really good. It's really good. Andor, I'd recommend it to like anybody. Mm-hmm. I'm watching it again actually now. Yeah, the rest of them, like the Boba Fett show, you can like skip that. It's like even Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. I've been watching that, but it's fine. It's not a bad show, Mandalorian. But yeah, like Andor is like definitely a step up. It's like, you know, that all that stuff in the prison there, like in the second half, like that stuff's really great. And I just love the concepts of it and like the science fiction concepts and like they're in a prison, like. Like if the floor is like electrocuted, like if they like, you know, the guards can like activate the floor at any time and they're wearing like these boots that like make them immune to like the electricity, but they can kill the prisoners with it.
and like prisoners just kill themselves by like just jumping onto the floor like at night. Like there's no cell doors.
Like, that whole just, arc, like, it's like a really bittersweet ending. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's so good. Uh huh. It's really well done, I thought. And yeah, it's like some great Star Wars content. It's like a building off like Rogue One and that kind of like with the character and whatever.
It's Tony Gilroy, right? So he's like wrote the Bourne movies. It's got this kind of espionage. It's not really as interested in the fantasy stuff as much. It's more, yeah, a bit more like
that's a good approach to it too. I really like that. Like it doesn't always have to be science fantasy. It can like branching Star Wars out into other genres that like make sense. You know, not like a musical or whatever, but like, yeah, spy. It's a more of like a spy show, and it works great. Mm-hmm. I really like the show. It's great, great twists and great like characters and writing. Yeah, it's such a good one. I'm excited for season two. Definitely, I'm glad. Glad we got a question about that because it's such a good show. I you know, I'm singing praise for it like wherever I can if it like makes sense. It's such like, a good show.
So many people require so much convincing at this point for like anything to do with this IP because of like just how all over the place it's been.
But everyone's watching The Idol right now. I'm like, don't watch that shit. Like, The Idol. It's terrible. I was watching more of it. I watched like that sex scene in season or episode two of The Idol. That's like it's been voted like really the worst sex scene of all time by GQ. Yeah, like all kinds of like dumb dialogue in it. I had to skip to that part because the rest of the episode's so boring. I'm like, what's even going on? There's like nothing happening.
Yeah, I watched episode
show.
3 today. So like half the it's only 6 episodes. It's half over now.
That's like the funniest part to me. Like I was reading like, oh, so catch The Idol season finale July 2nd. I'm like, what? Like it's already over? Yeah, yeah. Like just started.
Yeah, there's nothing
like,
happening.
What the fuck? Ugh. Fuck
bizarre,
The Idol.
Bizarre.
Terrible show. Yeah, watch Andor.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely good.
Okay. Watch Andor.
At some point.
You would.
Well, you've seen like Rogue One, so like you would
actually
follow
haven't.
It. Oh no! Oh, I thought you reviewed that. Yeah.
No.
You don't even have to watch Rogue One. Yeah, you don't have to. Just watch Andor. It's funny.
And I
don't have to watch like anything else Star Wars really to like enjoy the show.
I'm still going through my list of like my watch list of 2016 movies, and that's been sitting on it maybe the longest. I'm just like I'm really just dreading pressing play on that one, you know?
What, Andor?
Rogue One.
Or Rogue One.
Rogue One. Oh, okay. 2016 movies.
Yeah, I mean I wonder what you'd think of that, your perspective on it. Because it could be very like hit or miss, I feel.
Yeah.
I like it, but yeah, it's like catering
it.
To
like
Star
it.
Wars fans a bit.
It kind of opened the floodgates with the CG people thing.
I didn't like about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's like the first big example of that. Yeah, like the CG Tarkin. Andor kind of like just works on its own. Like you don't have to watch any other Star Wars content. I think you know enough about Star Wars, Adam, to like know what a stormtrooper is. Like, like it's just like the most basic
stuff. The white
stuff,
guys.
You know? Yeah, right. Like that's all you need to know, basically. It's just like a good science fiction show,
right?
It's not really interested in like the bullshit that kind of like the references that like drag like
it
these other
Star
shows
Wars
down.
Cool again to me, which was like a big deal, you know? It's like actually genuinely cool. Yeah.
We're like that Kenobi show is so dragged down with like referencing like the prequel movies and Hayden Christensen and like all this other like you gotta throw this in there. You gotta it's
like
so
chase
bogged
scenes
down
and stuff
by that.
That
Andor's really its own thing. That's like one of my favorite things about it. It just does its own thing and it does it really well. Yeah. Yeah, great show. Unlike The Idol.
I'll be the judge of that. The Idol's gonna be so good, bros. I'm so hyped to see The Weeknd.
Mr. Weeknd fan of you,
Ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd. All right, I guess there's a film recommendation, and I'm just kind of like struggling to figure out which one I've got like a few here. Maybe you can help me narrow it down. Do you want me to recommend something I've seen before or something that I haven't seen before?
Do something you haven't seen before. Do something crazy.
Okay, yeah, do you want an American movie or a Taiwanese movie?
Yeah, you could do Thai.
We're gonna watch our first Edward Yang film on the podcast. I think it's Taiwanese. I hope I didn't get that wrong, but I'm not familiar with them, but everybody's telling us to watch them. Edward Yang. I'm going to pick the shorter of the two that everyone's telling me to watch. The one that's 3 hours and not 4 hours. We're going to watch Yi Yi, a one and a two, directed by Edward Yang. There's a Criterion Blu-ray for it, I believe. And yep, if you don't want to be spoiled for Yi Yi, spelt Y-I space Y-I, year 2000, directed by Edward Yang, who, if I click on his profile, oh, he was born in China. Okay. I don't know.
Oops.
Well, no, because he's one of the leading artists of Taiwanese New Wave. So we'll figure out. Okay. I think I'm good here. Whatever. All right.
Maybe he like immigrated to Taiwan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you don't want to be spoiled for Yi Yi, directed by Yang Gang, watch it before the next episode. These episodes come out every 2 weeks. You can listen to them early by going to sardonicast.com, signing up for premium. It's $2 a month. You can get these episodes early and support the show. Also, patreon.com/sardonicast. You know what I love about our podcast name? I can say it, and I don't feel like I have to spell it. I feel like people can just like figure out how to spell it when I say it, you know?
That does
Sardonicast.
Help,
it's spelled exactly how it sounds. Easy.
Unlike a Valyrian and the city of Ralph, Adam, and Alex. Or
yeah, I mean, like, I really fucked over myself with my gaming channel name, didn't I? You know, like, Adam Plays, like, not A-D-U-M-P-L-A-Z-E. Go fuck yourself. All right, we got merch, link in the description. We got a Sardonicast highlights channel on YouTube. Go check it out. Go subscribe. Subscribe to the regular Sardonicast channel on YouTube. Also, hit the bell. Thanks for joining on us on the tour. Have a happy 1000th DC shit film.
Have a happy Speed Force, everybody.
Bye. Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.